Matters. Tomorrow's news today.
This is you. This is your sister, your wife, your daughter. But this right here is you. This is your sister, your wife, your daughter. This is you. This is your sister, your wife, your daughter. But this is you. And this is their reaction when you are killed. This is the joy they feel when your sister is raped, when your children are castrated, brainwashed to hate you. This is their ecstasy when the floor of the subway car is awash in your blood. This is you. Make no mistake, that is a symbol that is you. But this won't last long. They can't help themselves because they're so ugly and so low that the only joy they can experience, the only good that they can envision, is to take something beautiful or innocent down to their level. And when they can't do it, the next best thing is blood. This is Charlie's family, and these are his children who will never be able to hug their dad and grow up with a murdered father. And these are the people who smugly revel in this, and they won't stop with just Charlie. The boats are burned. There's nobody coming to help. The barbarians are at the gate. This is the fall of ancient Rome that we are living through currently. And what happens in the next 2 weeks is going to determine the future of mankind. That's not hyperbole. That's just how it is.
That's just how it is. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the war for humanity. And you are at the heart of it here. Infowars.com, band.video. Share that link. Glad to be here. I'm Harrison Smith sitting in for Alex Jones today. Jay Dyer will take over in the fourth hour. But we have a lot to cover, a lot of breaking news. Some just breaking news. We have a new interview with Kash Patel, head of the FBI. The first interview he's done since the investigation into Charlie Kirk's assassination has, I guess, found a suspect. We're going to get into that as well. More and more information coming out about what led to this, I don't want to call it a tragedy because that sounds like it may have been accidental, to this horrific and brutal murder of Charlie Kirk. We're finding out more and more about the very dangerous groups of radicals operating on American soil. Luckily, it seems like some people in power, like Donald Trump himself, recognize this threat. Others in the Republican Party still not sure what time it is. They're still acting like we can just come together. Unity is what we need. Both sides really need to tamp down on the rhetoric. It's not both sides, it's one side. And it's time that our side recognize the reality of the situation that we're in. Sam Hyde obviously does. And I think a lot of other people are waking up to this. And just know, this is what InfoWars has been telling you and working as hard as we possibly can to avoid this outcome. We're really on the precipice right now, and we're gonna break it all down. But first, we're going to start, when we get back on the other side of this short break, with what the reaction has been from the right. We've talked a lot about the reaction on the left of the viciousness and the hatefulness and the celebrating of the murder of a good man. We're going to talk about what the right has been doing. Charlie Kirk's assassination has inspired an awakening like I've never seen. And the killers of this good man are going to regret it if they haven't already. We'll be right back.
every guest we've interviewed in studio, I've given our ultramethylene blue to, and they've all been blown away. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't hype. All our supplements are great and have amazing health effects, but this one hits 99% of people within 30 minutes, and the long-term effects are even more amazing. So secure your ultramethylene blue now, the most powerful you can get on the market, at thealexandstore.com, and fund the tip of the spear in the fight for liberty and supercharge your own personal life. Believe me, if you don't take action and get it, you will never know how amazing it is. Over 99% of people have had incredible effects. You owe it to yourself right now to try Ultramethylene Blue, exclusively available at thealexandstore.com.
InfoWars.com Frontline Report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Alex Jones Show. I'm Harrison Smith, sitting in today for Alex Jones. Things are very much in flux here at InfoWars. Of course, the American Journal this morning was hosted by Brianna Morello. She's taking over at that spot, replacing me as I move over to the War Room. But of course, Alex is out of town, so I'm taking over in the big seat here for the time being. Alex will be hosting the first part of the show tomorrow, but for the time being, I'm here to guide you through the absolute insanity and mixed in with some incredible hopefulness that has come about as the consequence of the murder of Charlie Kirk. There's other stuff to talk about as well. We'll get into some of the geopolitical goings on today because the world hasn't stopped, even though it has felt that way. It's felt an awful lot like that. I don't know if there's been a instance, an event of this magnitude since maybe 9/11. I was trying to think back. I mean, COVID was so huge and such an upheaval, but it was a slow burn. There wasn't one major event that then, you know, changed the world in an instant. And that's what we've got with the Charlie Kirk assassination. And I was trying to think back to another time when something like this has happened. I mean, thank God we avoided that. Last year, last July, when another apparently crazed lone wolf leftist tried to kill Donald Trump, now was a moment where everybody sort of paused and breathed a sigh of relief that the worst didn't happen, but we didn't get that this time. We have to look it in the eye and really contend with what the assassination of Charlie Kirk means from here on out. Now, I don't even want to call it like a silver lining of this because, you know, I don't think anything is worth what Charlie went through. But the outpouring of love and Christianity, the church attendance skyrocketing this weekend, as I know many, many people that I'm familiar with went to church for the first time, maybe ever, maybe in decades, inspired by Charlie Kirk, inspired by the videos of him that have been spread around. And I said on the day that it happened, they think they killed Charlie Kirk. In reality, they made him immortal. And the only way to prevent this type of violence from happening over and over and over again is to make them regret it, is to make them realize that was a very dumb idea. That was a very stupid idea. We thought we were going to get rid of this guy that we didn't like. Instead, we created 10 million of him. Instead of getting rid of him so we never have to see him again, now we see his face every minute of every day. I think that's the only way to get these people to come to terms with the reality of their actions. Is to really, really, really make them regret it. And again, luckily some people on the right wing and in the Republican Party recognize this. We'll get to some of those clips. We do have breaking news from Katz Patel. We have statements from Donald Trump. We have some new information being given out about who this assassin was and what may have motivated him, and how he got caught. I'll bring you all of that new information. But last night and over the weekend, vigils were held around the world. And I want to go to those for a minute. Before we dive back into the cesspit of leftist mentality, let's look at the good that has come from this. let's look at the effect of martyrdom and the power that it can have to move millions of people. Massive displays of memorials and vigils in places like Huntington Beach. We can go to clip 132 and 136 here. This is Huntington Beach, just crowds as far as the eye can see, coming together, waving the American flag, praying for Charlie Kirk. An absolutely beautiful, if not devastatingly somber situation. And in cities all over the United States, vigils just like this were held. 136 as well, turning out for Charlie Kirk in Beverly Hills. Clip 134 here, this is thousands of Canadians in Calgary, Canada, singing the national anthem in honor of Charlie Kirk. Let's go now to clip number 134. Across the world, 1776 worldwide is what I'm seeing as people awaken to this and unify. I'm almost tempted to go back and get that famous video of Alex Jones the first time he appeared with Joe Rogan, where Joe Rogan asked him just sort of lay out the paradigm in totality. And Alex responds that evil is constantly working in the shadows, agitating, collaborating, working behind the scenes to gain control, and good never wants to organize. We never want to get together until we're forced to. And then we beat the living snot out of the evil. And I feel like that's what's happening right now. And I guess our mission has to be to make sure that this isn't a flash in the pan, that this isn't something that we forget about in a month. And we honor, this day next year and remember it, but nothing has changed. We have to make something out of this. We have to do something about this. And we have to make them regret it. Let's not talk about that. Sorry, we're staying on the good side here. Let's go to 121. This is the New York Jets holding a moment of silence for Charlie Kirk last night, as we're seeing sports teams and concerts all over the world again honoring Charlie Kirk. And I've just never seen a response like this. I honestly haven't. 113, these are flag wavers in Plano, Texas. And we can go to that. And of course, there are a few, I don't even know if calling them people is accurate. There are a few vessels of evil that have attacked some of these vigils. And most of them have learned that that's not a good idea. We go to clip 118 here. Man tramples on Charlie Kirk Memorial at TPUSA and is promptly beaten up and arrested. And look, we're just not going to take it anymore, all right? We're not going to take being called evil by the people who will go start stomping on flowers at a vigil of an innocent man murdered in cold blood. We're just not playing this game anymore. We're not putting up with it. Nor should we. And it's good to see swift and immediate justice for scumbags like this who have gotten too used to getting away with it for too long. And in a way, that's almost like our secret weapon, is these people have that the muscle of like dealing with an actual, force of law. It's atrophied. They don't have it anymore. They're out there just saying this stuff and just doing this stuff out in the open because they're like children that have never get punished. They're spoiled. They need to be brought back into line. So in a way, it's like they've made our job so easy for us. They don't even hide. They're evil. They're out there bragging about it. Well, good. They're making the list for us. And again, some people on the right understand this. We'll talk about the people on the right who don't. One person on the right who understands this is Elon Musk. He, of course, addressed the massive Million Man March in the UK over the weekend, which was already scheduled on September 13th. but was obviously maximized and the energy poured into it was so much greater following the death of Charlie Kirk. As again, people from all over the world respected him, loved him, followed him, listened to him, had their lives changed by him, and now feel personally hurt at what's happened to him. This awakening is global. It's monumental. And it's only just getting started. Let's go to clip 111. This is Elon Musk addressing the crowds at the UK. We played the clip yesterday, very similar to the Patrick Henry speech. War is already here. Peace is not an option. This is a little bit different. This is Elon Musk talking about our friend Charlie Kirk, who was murdered, and that the left is the party of murder. It's not even a debate at this point. Here's Elon Musk in the UK this weekend.
And when I read about some of the horrific stories and how the government did nothing and tried to hide it, they try to hide these horrific crimes. And then you see how much violence there's on the left with our friend Charlie Kirk getting murdered in Colbert this week and people on the left celebrating it openly. The left is the party of murder and celebrating murder. I mean, let that sink in for a minute. That's who we're dealing with here. That is who we're dealing with.
It really is undeniable at this point. And I've got stats to back it up. In case your own observation of the sick mentality of the left growing all around you isn't enough to prove to you which side is the violent side and which side is the receiver of that violence. Yeah, well, we can go to the stats in just a little bit. But I didn't realize, and thinking about it, I can't find any information to contradict this. This is a priest saying that this was the first political assassination in America since 1968. That is the streak that's been broken now. And again, I want you to understand how rare and how special America is. Now, maybe you could, you know, find an instance here or there that you could claim as political assassination. Obviously, there have been attempts. But looking into it and thinking about it, that sounds about right. 1968, Robert F. Kennedy, sort of the last major political murder in the United States. Now, in Mexico, during election season, sometimes over 100 people, dozens and dozens of people are assassinated continually. That's true. Leo Ryan died in 1978 as he was going to investigate the Jonestown cult. You might call that a political assassination, but let's go to clip 110 here. This is a priest talking about what this means. The first political assassination since 1968, what it portends for America. And it's a very slippery slope from here. Obviously, once you open this door, it's very hard to close again. And I'm constantly trying to reemphasize that, like, it's not just a matter of tacos versus hamburgers or, you know, whatever sort of the liminal, very surface level of culture is. America has a culture of decency, of goodness, of respect. We have a culture that does not provide for bribes and, you know, shadowy gangs manipulating everything. Obviously, that exists. But it's very hidden, and it has to be, because the American people wouldn't stand for it if it was out in the open. Look at basically every third world country, and it is just replete with bribery and corruption. Just, it is an everyday thing there. And at a certain point, it almost has to be accepted. Like in Mexico, where you have hundreds of assassinations every time an election comes around. I don't want to live in that world. I would rather we uphold our American system. I'd rather we crush the left with an iron boot so that we can continue to actually operate a civilized society rather than allow them to drag us down to the third world with them. We're not going in that direction. This is a streak in America. For nearly 50 years, no political assassinations, no major outright devastating political violence. That streak's been broken now. Where it goes from here is up to us. But here's I believe this is a Catholic priest, at least it looks like one, maybe Episcopalian, but he's talking about the fact that this was the first political assassination since 1968. Let's watch.
This is a political assassination. Do you know that this is our first political assassination in the United States since 1968? Martin Luther King was killed in April of that year, and then Robert F. Kennedy was killed in June of that year. Charlie Kirk was bringing the truth to college campuses, mainly the beauty of God and country. They feared him because he was actually changing the mind of college kids, showing them the insanity of what they are being taught, the indoctrination, and the lie that it's based on. He said, when people quit talking, that's when you get violence. So he invited discussion. He also, though, lived what he preached. He just didn't preach it. He lived. He said, I'm religious, and I want you to find the happiness of God, of living virtuous, not living sin. That's not hate. He was asked if he died what he would want to be remembered for. And he answered, the courage of my faith. That's what I want to be remembered for. You know, as a Protestant, he had a lot of courage. One of the most disappointing things, in addition to the tragedy, was if you saw the video on the House floor in our government yesterday. Someone asked for a moment of silent prayer. And according to the feedback that I'm getting, it was one political party members screaming no. And they were booing when they were asked to pray. Violence and murder are the tragic consequences, it was said yesterday, when there is a demonizing of those you disagree with.
And again, we're going to get into the breaking news. We've got a new interview with Kash Patel that we'll break down for you. We've got some new information about DNA evidence matching the suspects to the Kirk assassination. The official story, I think, aligns with a lot of information that I'm finding. I think there are still some unanswered questions. There are still some gaps. There are still some very suspicious things when it comes to this suspect, not least of which is the fact that he's not cooperating with authorities despite apparently turning himself in. It's a little bit odd. But we'll get into some of the inconsistencies, and we'll get into the transgender network at work before the assassination of Charlie Kirk, and at least six examples of transgender people having foreknowledge of the assassination, when it would take place and how it would take place, and possibly in communication with the shooter himself. So like, what's being uncovered here, it's not exclusive to Utah. For some reason, it's very prevalent there. And there are some other sort of associated groups that we'll have to get into as well, including apparently a bomb found under a news van earlier today, also in Utah. But this is a nationwide cancer that's rotting us out from the inside, and we'll get into how that leads to Charlie Kirk. But I want to go to clip 47 here, because I think this is a very good sort of reframing tactic that Glenn Beck is using, because words matter, how you frame this matters. And in fact, I have another video that I could show you, but essentially they show the same coverage 24 hours in between when Charlie Kirk is first murdered. They say, Charlie Kirk, a Republican activist, has been shot. 24 hours later, they're saying, Charlie Kirk, a far-right agitator, a far-right, you know, rabble-rouser, has been killed. These words matter. Here's Glenn Beck making the case that Charlie Kirk wasn't a right-wing activist. He was a civil rights activist and should be honored as such. Let's watch.
We must stop calling Charlie anything other than a civil rights leader. We need to plant that stake deep. It is time that we point out that what he was doing was not politics. What he was doing was trying to stand up for people's civil rights, to show people how a civilization is not a civilization unless you can have a dialogue with people who are diametrically opposed to you, that don't believe anything that you believe in, And yet you can have a civil dialogue and how important that is. That's our civil right, our right to free speech. And that gunman was trying to take that right away from him and from you and everyone else. Shut up. You will be silenced. You will not say those things. And there has been a force in this country to try to convince people that you don't have a right, that you have a responsibility to silence others. You don't. In this country, one of our main civil rights is we can express ourselves the way we feel we need to express ourselves. And I'm sorry, if you don't like it, you have to just take it and then say, I'd like to have a discussion with you on that. I'd like to know how you got there. I'd like to have the opportunity to argue against that. And you have that right to argue against it. And hopefully, if we are more like Charlie Kirk, we're having those dialogues with each other in a civilized fashion. But make no mistake, Charlie Kirk was a civil rights leader as much as Martin Luther King. I'm waiting to see the first city that will make a Charlie Kirk Boulevard. Phoenix, you should be the one. There's a Martin Luther King Boulevard. There should be a Charlie Kirk Boulevard. Charlie Kirk was a civil rights leader, and we must take that for him and own that, because all of these so-called civil rights leaders, Black Lives Matter, that was a money scam that had nothing to do with anything other than money and power. Charlie was actually fighting for civil rights.
And I completely agree with that. I think that is the correct way to frame it. And of course, this has been one of my argument tactics. I've been saying since, you know, the day after Charlie Kirk was assassinated, now is not the time for timidity. Now is not the time for wishy-washiness or smiling and nodding along only to later go, man, those people are crazy. Now's the time to assert your moral superiority, because the people celebrating or even moderately justifying the murder of Charlie Kirk have absolutely no excuse and need to be confronted with that. And one of the things I've been saying is people go, well, you know, he said some hateful things. And, you know, if you're going to say that, gosh, you know, you're going to suffer the consequences. I'll say, okay, just like Martin Luther King Jr., huh? Maybe he should have shut his mouth if he didn't feel like being killed. Same thing with JFK, RFK, Jesus Christ. Maybe they all should have just shut their mouths if they didn't want to die. It's an insane position to have. And they're only able to have that position because of the demonization of Charlie Kirk that's happened through the media over the last decade. He is a civil rights champion. He is a Christian. He was a good man. And anybody even approaching justifying his murder needs to have a mirror held up to them so they can see the monsters that they've become. On the other side, we're going to get into what we know now, all of the official story. We'll question it. We'll hold it up to the light and compare it with what we know to be true and tell you everything we know about this guy and his connections. But I think every major right-wing gathering from now on needs to have this chant going on in the background. USA, USA sounds a little bit different now. Let's go to clip number 73. I want the name of Charlie Kirk reverberating in the ears of the people who hate him for the rest of their lives. We'll never let them forget, and we'll keep his memory alive. We'll be back on the other side with breaking news. Don't go anywhere, folks.
Well, I'm a 10-4 hat wearing meat-eating son of a gun, loving fun, loving hot-blooded Texian, two-stepping outlaw free one, looking for a little fun.
The official Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit, 100% lifetime guarantee, high quality aluminum. Got the famous shot of me there with the aluminum hat. 50 square feet, 100% lifetime guarantee. Protect your mind from the globalist. I love the idea they had of an Alex Jones stress ball. People really love it. That's available. You know, fun little things, not just the widest selection of Patriot t-shirts and ball caps and hoodies and sweaters, but cool stuff like this. But now we have the official Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit. So get your Alex Jones tinfoil Get now at thealexjonesstore.com.
How do I explain to people that my tongue is blue? Because I love this stuff, methylene blue. I'm able to work like 18-hour days sometimes. This stuff is like rocket fuel.
I didn't know you were going to plug this. You even ordered it yourself, I later learned. What is the effect of our medical-grade methylene blue been on you, Roger?
Incredible, both physical and mental energy and focus. I mean, it really is like rocket fuel. And all you still like Brain Force? Back when I did the show with Owen Schroyer, the original, the real War Room, I was a big aficionado of Brain Force and Brain Force Plus. This is even a greater product. I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Well, I've not had any since Friday. I only take it every couple days. So I'm going to take my dose of methylene blue, my Topo Chico. It is amazing. And people ask me, what does it do? It cleans out your mitochondria. It skips the oxidization process in the cell. It's like iodine to the next level. It is such a game changer. Roger Stone, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. God bless you.
Our medical grade USP ultramethylene blue, exclusively at thealexjonesstore.com, has taken the country by storm. You've seen the rave reviews. All of our guests that have taken it have been blown away. Zen, clarity, focus, like a fog has lifted. It's not a stimulant, but it feels like one with no letdown. But the best part is it's so good for your cells, so good for your mitochondria. It's incredible. Now we have it in sealed capsules with organic vitamin C to supercharge it as well. Get a 1 month supply so you can travel with it. Talk to your physicians before you take it because it's very, very powerful. It can interact with some drugs. But after you've done your research, get your ultramethylene blue either in liquid or now in capsules exclusively at thealexjonesstore.com and it funds our operations. And if you subscribe, you can lock in 50% off right now on all future orders and cancel anytime. Take action now at thealexjonesstore.com. Become a subscriber and lock in 50% off on top of the already incredible savings. Thealexjonesstore.com is the destination of health, liberty, and freedom. Ultimate Life Force. That's the name of the new product. This is hands down the strongest, most powerful spike protein detox out there with triple action. Taking all the major best-selling certified safe formulas and integrating it in to just a massive daily dose. And it isn't just to clean out your blood, ladies and gentlemen. It is so good for your whole body. It's got 400 milligrams of NAC alone. That is the precursor to glutathione and just does incredible things for your whole body. Not just that, the energy, the stamina, all of it. Ladies and gentlemen, we're so excited about this formula. I don't have time to get into all the other great ingredients in it. Go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and check it out for yourself. This is so game-changing. Lesser formulas have already helped so many people that I've personally bought them for and, you know, given them to friends and family. This is amazing. Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com for 50% off.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, folks. This is The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex, although we are receiving a dispatch from Alex, and we'll go to that video very shortly, so stay tuned for that. We do have some breaking news, some developments in the assassination of Charlie Kirk and the suspect that has been arrested. Again, I think the more and more information comes out, the more and more it looks like this is the right guy. It looks like they have the right suspect here. And it looks like he was not alone and was, in fact, involved in some very nefarious groups that are working very hard to hide their tracks. But a lot of internet investigators have already discovered and archived their tweets that show foreknowledge of the attack. They're all trans, by the way. So there's that element to it. And we'll bring you all of that. The latest is that Kash Patel has given his first interview about the investigation into the Charlie assassin suspect. He confirms the family says Robinson, this suspect, was radicalized by the left. He also mentions a note that was written by the suspect to their trans lover. Let's go now to Kash Patel this morning on Fox News.
Is that the written note, we believe, what did exist. And we have evidence to show what was in that note, which is, and I'm going to summarize, basically saying, the suspect wrote a note saying, I have the opportunity to take out Charlie Kirk, and I'm going to take it. That note was written before the shooting. Evidence of its existence, we now have learned, existed before the shooting, was in the location in the suspect and partner's home. But we have since learned that the note, even though it has been destroyed, we have found forensic evidence of the note, and we have confirmed what that note says because of our aggressive interview posture at the FBI.
Okay, now, of course, Castrotel has come under quite a bit of scrutiny over how this was handled, people pointing out that it wasn't the FBI that found the suspect. The suspect was turned in by family members. There was also some suspicious changes of FBI leadership, specifically in Salt Lake City. About a month ago, mid-August, the head of the Salt Lake City Bureau of the FBI, who had only been put in, I believe, in April or May of this year, was removed, and nobody could quite figure out why. And we're wondering, because any interview about her was saying she's the best of the best, and she wasn't even fired. She was transferred somewhere else. We wonder if that wasn't pre-planning, if this was, in fact, a flag of some sort, or if there was foreknowledge in the authorities. Maybe they would want somebody there who could manage the whole affair. After all, the FBI seems to be a rogue agency at this point. It seems like Kash Patel is not really the one in charge, and that's very troubling. In fact, Kash Patel himself complained that they withheld the picture of the shooter for 12 hours from him, not even from the world at large. And then they withheld it from release to the public until apparently Kash Patel leaned on them and said, no, you need to release this picture, which never made any sense to me. You don't have the guy, but you have a picture of him. But they're saying, but don't worry, we know who he is, so we're going to get him. It's like, okay, but he's out there somewhere, and somebody could be at a supermarket with him, or, you know, whatever. You got to put a picture of this guy out. Totally crazy. So they withheld the picture from Kash Patel, and then withheld it from the public. Kash Patel came out and said, I forced them to release the picture. And it's clear that he is not the one in charge. He is not the one making decisions, as far as I can tell. And that's extremely troubling. And he's receiving a lot of criticism for this, and I think he deserves it. We voted for Donald Trump to put his people in charge of these organizations, and if they're being undercut or undermined or subverted by some shadowy figures in the background that we didn't vote for, that we didn't appoint, I think it reveals the underlying real big problem in America. That we can't vote our way out of this if voting doesn't actually matter. If whoever we vote in just gets replaced by whoever the deep state prefers. This is unacceptable. And so it points to a much larger problem in the FBI. But there, that's Castrotel saying that there was a note they found forensic evidence for. I suppose that would mean electronic evidence somehow. And that note showed that there was foreknowledge and that, you know, he'd planned to do this and had shared his plan with people that he knew. So I expect those people to be charged as accessories before the fact. They kind of have to be, and they're not the only ones. But there's more information coming out today from Zero Hedge. Kash Patel confirms DNA evidence match in Kirk assassination, reveals details of this note. DNA evidence matching that of Charlie Kirk's suspected killer was found at the crime scene. FBI Director Kash Patel said on Monday, Tyler Robinson, the suspect arrested for the September 10th assassination of conservative influencer at Utah Valley University, also left a note indicating that he expressed he had the opportunity to kill Kirk. Patel said in a September 15th interview with Fox News, Patel said, I can report today that DNA hits from the towel that was wrapped around the firearm and DNA from the screwdriver are positively processed for the suspect in custody, meaning that according to them, they have DNA from that they know is the suspect's that matches the DNA found on the rifle. He referred to reports of an alleged note left behind by Robinson saying that the suspect wrote that he had the opportunity to take out Kirk and said, I'm going to take it. That was written before the September 10th shooting. He said there was a note and text message exchange, adding that it was destroyed, but that the investigators recovered it. Other evidence in the case, Patel said, was shocking, although he did not go into more details. Touching on the possible ideologically based motive, Patel said that the Robinson family said that he subscribed to left-wing ideology, echoing a statement made by Utah Governor Spencer Cox during several Sunday interviews about the suspect's viewpoints. And of course, the left is trying to blame this on right-wingers because they live in an absurd world of delusion, and their accusations really aren't even worth addressing because it is, I mean, it's like, it's almost like no matter what this guy did or believed before, the moment he killed Charlie Kirk, he became a left-wing terrorist. Like, it's really not even that complicated. Even if he was a Republican, which he wasn't, even if he was conservative, which he absolutely was not, it wouldn't matter because clearly his last and final and greatest act in his pathetic, pitiful little life was to deal a devastating blow against the right wing of this country. So, yeah, he was a left-winger. I mean, they still are trying to say that the people who tried to kill Donald Trump are right-wingers. It's absurd. It's honestly not worth addressing, except to just point out the mental illness and desperate dishonesty of the left. Now, I understand we have a dispatch from Alex Jones. We'll go to that now. Of course, Alex Jones is on the road. He's on his way back. He'll be hosting at least a portion of the show tomorrow. But for now, we receive dispatches from the road. Here's a report that Alex Jones filed minutes ago.
All of us have flaws. I can't really tell you what to believe in or how to feel. Like, everybody's having a human experience. Like, why knock him for having this human experience or what he believe in?
Even though he says things that are anti-women, black, all that.
I can't judge him for that.
You can't.
I can't judge him for that. But I can use judgment. He didn't deserve that.
Right.
Yeah.
As a human being.
Yeah.
You are very spiritual.
You know, yeah.
No, you're,
I
you
can't
sound
go
like,
left. I
you,
can't go left
no,
with that.
No, you sound like, you mean left, gone
yeah,
left,
like,
not left.
Because I'm
right.
Humanity. Yeah. I'm humanity and love first.
You're about to see Don Lemon engage in a very slick sleight of hand, okay? He comes over to black folks and says, oh, Charlie Kirk was against women and black people. So what do you think about him dying? He's literally talking about someone who was just murdered, but he puts the judgment onto them with a false statement on top of it, which again makes Charlie Kirk and all of us that are populist nationalists the bad guys that have to explain ourselves, because Don Lemon and the corporate media, they are the gods that are from the mountain that label us, and then we have to justify ourselves to them. And so the lady didn't want to talk crap about Charlie. So he lays the, oh, he's against women, he's against black people, but that's okay. And she says, well, I really can't say that's who he is. I really can't judge him. And she's saying she doesn't know it's true. Plus, she's not going to judge him. She's being polite. But he's spinning it now like, oh, she's so good. She forgives him for all he did when he just got murdered in front of his family. And the left's calling for his wife's death, his children's death. I mean, you've seen the clips. I mean, it is just wall-to-wall evil. So this is how these sickos turn around. And how they set themselves up as a moral authority that dictate to all of us that we have to prove ourselves that we're liberal, we have to prove ourselves that we're not racist. And on the other extreme, you've got the anti-Israel people who have a lot of legitimate issues. Then they attack everybody else, saying, if you don't totally agree with us, you work for Israel. And by extension, we now have to prove to them that we're really good little Hitlers. No, I don't like what Israel's doing. I don't like what Hitler did. See the difference? I'm actually educated. I'm actually informed. But it's the same coming out of these groups, this tribalism, trying to henpeck us, like the transgenderism, make you accept their cult as well. So here's the full Lemon clip, and it's just beyond disgusting, and he's so pathetic, and he has almost no viewers. But he doesn't ever give up, does he? Because he's getting NGO money. You know he is.
What do you think would happen to Charlie Kirk?
It's just messed up. Totally messed up. You know, that was messed up. Like, nobody deserved that. He definitely didn't deserve that. He was a good guy.
You think he was a good guy?
I think he was.
The only Kirks you recognize is Captain Kirk. I don't know Charlie Kirk. Yeah. I don't know who
you
that
don't
is.
Know who it is?
I don't know who that is.
I know who it was. Like, I
only know about him with some
All of us have flaws. I can't really tell you what to believe in or how to feel. Like, everybody's having a human experience. Like, why knock him for having this human experience or what he believe in?
Even though he says things that are anti-women, black, all that.
I can't judge him for that.
You can't.
I can't judge him for that. But I can use judgment. He didn't deserve that.
Right.
Yeah.
As a human being.
Yeah.
You are very spiritual.
You know, yeah.
No, you're,
I can't
you sound
go
like,
left. I can't go left
no,
with that.
No, you sound like, you mean left, gone
yeah,
left,
like,
not left.
Because I'm
right.
Humanity. Yeah. I'm humanity and love first.
No, I love that. So the first person I spoke to here didn't want to be on camera, and he said, I can't judge him because I'm not God. And so let him, you know, let the, whatever the reaction is, if the government wants to give him a state-like funeral, if they let him do it because God is the only judge. And
yeah, like nobody really can judge him.
Yeah.
And like I kind of like seen him before all of this happened, but I don't see whatever everybody else was seeing. Right. So, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, that's how you feel. In the shine.
course, is just a compilation of Charlie Kirk and one of his best friends, Candace Owens. Everything these people say about Charlie Kirk is absurd. They don't even know what he said in the first place. I think what Alex pointed out there is so important. They have this rhetorical strategy to put you on the defensive. And because we argue in such good faith, typically on the right, we try to justify things. We try to explain things to him, to them, as if they're going to wake up, right? And I've got video after video I could show you. If they say he's anti-black, I can show you 15 different black content creators who are like, I'm who I am today, thanks to Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk identified me when I was a nobody and helped elevate me and give me attention and made me who I am today. I can show you, want to talk about he hated gay people? I can show you video after video after video of Charlie Kirk going to bat and very forcefully defending inclusion of gay people in the right wing, not excluding people because of their personal sexual preference. You want to say that he said that, and here's the thing. They don't know what the hell he said. They don't know what the hell he said. So my advice continues to be, assert your moral superiority. Do not even let them question whether or not Charlie Kirk said the thing that he said. The conversation should go something like this. You know, I don't think Charlie Kirk deserved to die. Oh, but did you hear what he said about et cetera, et cetera? And your answer should be, finish that thought. He said something you don't like, so you think he deserved to be murdered in front of his own children? What the hell is wrong with you? That is the only response that you need to have. Not, well, actually, if you look at the full context of what he said, it's actually, because what do you think they're going to be like? Oh, gee, now that I know the full context, now that I know that that statement was taken out of context and actually was a lot more thoughtful than I thought it was, well, I don't hate Charlie Kirk anymore. Well, now I'm sad he died. Come on. If that was possible, they'd already be sad. If they had human empathy, if they had a conscience, you wouldn't need to be having this conversation. So don't justify why you don't think he should have been murdered. Make them justify why he should. That's my advice. Oh, so he said some things you didn't like, and so you think he should be murdered in front of his own children? Is that what you're saying? What happened to you? What is wrong with you? How dare you? That's it. Just no arguing, just assertion of moral certainty. That's all that's needed here. These people are wrong. There's absolutely no reason why you even need to argue on their ground. And again, I've got 15 different videos. I've collected them because I was saying my wife was going to see some friends. I was like, hey, if the topic of Charlie Kirk comes up, here's a video if they talk about trans. Here's a video if they talk about gun control. Here's a video. Just so anything that, because they don't have original thoughts, because the people that we're talking about are more like animals. I tried to explain this the other day. See, the reason humans can hunt animals is because animals are predictable. They don't do things that are clever or shocking or original. A mouse, if you go left, he goes right. Okay? A deer hears a noise, runs away from the noise. They have programmed in almost robotic responses to stimuli. They don't have consciousness. That's how the left is. They haven't thought about this stuff. They haven't considered this stuff. They haven't meditated on this and come to a reasonable conclusion. They're repeating talking points that they don't even understand and aren't true in the first place. They're operating under multiple levels of delusion that it's impossible to pierce through. Just tell them they're evil. I mean, that's really all there is to it at this point. So they only have like four or five things that they say because that's what's been programmed into them. None of the things they say are true. Even if they were true, it wouldn't justify murdering Charlie Kirk. So now is not the time for arguments. Now is the time for simple assertion of reality in the face of these deceitful monsters that call themselves our fellow Americans. Let's go to clip number 24 here. This is the issue that we're dealing with, and we'll get into it. We'll get into what needs to be done here. But this is what we're dealing with. Clip number 24. This is at Georgia Tech University in Atlanta. And I believe this was the day after Charlie Kirk's assassination, and this is the type of material literature that was spread all around that campus. Let's watch.
The day after Charlie Kirk's murder, we're here at Georgia Tech University in Atlanta, Georgia, and the first thing I see when I come to the campus is the fall of the Trump fascist regime beginning November 5th, 2025. RefuseFascism.org needs to be investigated. 2028 is way too late. Trump must go now. If you walk with me here, we have another sign. This is the scary part. The time has come for the fall of the Trump fascist regime beginning November 5th. No, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. All over the campus, similar signs. No, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. RefuseFascism.org, followed by a sign that we already read. This is happening all over this campus. So you gotta ask yourself, when you see posters like this nonstop, what are they advocating for? Are they inciting certain events that we have seen recently? The time has come for the fall of the Trump fascist regime. The time has come. I want to say that again. The time has come. That is what left-leaning organization on college campuses at Georgia Tech are propagating to college students. So when I walk around and I ask students, do you condemn the murder of Charlie Kirk? And they say no. It's most likely because of stuff like this.
Those are clearly incitement to violence. That's not political speech. I'm sorry. If you're organizing and agitating for very explicitly the overthrow of the country, that's not telling people to go out and vote. That's not a get out the vote drive. That's not a political, you know, organization. We're going to go inspire people with our words. That's a call to action, and it's organized and it's professional. And those posters are professionally made and paid for. Breaking from Nick Sortor, the FBI and state agencies have launched investigations into multiple leftist groups in Utah for possible advanced knowledge of the Charlie Kirk assassination per Axios. They're also probing whether or not these groups provided material support after the killing. At least one group deactivated their social media pages after the shot was taken. Now, we've got that information, and some people on X have compiled it. Elon Musk retweeted it. We can go through that. From Bowtied Ranger, I think this is an appropriate way of understanding the left as it exists now. Trans goblins and their Reddit-brained fondlers, collectively the mentally unwell, make up the lower ranks of Antifa. The middle ranks are, we'll say, libtards from the FBI, CIA, Special Forces. Yes, there are, in fact, a ton of libtards in the De Oppresso Liber Green Berets and other branches of the national security apparatus. This is where all that tactical advice comes from in Discord channels. The highest ranks are the financiers, billionaires in foreign countries that hate the United States and launder their influence through Antifa so they can attack the United States from the inside. It's a legitimate terrorist organization that must be defeated immediately. Otherwise, it will continue to destroy this country. And I completely agree. And when you see posters like that hung up. And look, I'm a First Amendment absolutist for the most part. Organizing violence is not the First Amendment. I shouldn't have to say that, but people will be confused. And this is at a time when, for years, if a poster saying it's okay to be white appears on a telephone pole, the police get involved. I can show you multiple stories from like neighborhoods in Dallas where the police put out a, like, stay-at-home order. They're like, if everybody just go inside and shut your shutters, a racist flyer was found, and it says, it's okay to be white. And it's a full-on police response and investigation into that. Which is more, you know, threatening to overall public safety or our democracy? Is it white people merely saying that our existence is okay? It's okay, actually. It's not terrible. Not even, it's great to be white, which it is, by the way, but merely saying it's okay to be white inspires the police response. But you've got well-organized, well-funded organizations on campus saying now is the time to overthrow the Trump fascist regime through violence, obviously, is the intended message there. Yeah, we need to round these groups up. We need to shut them down. We need to protect ourselves from them. Again, luckily, some in the Trump orbit recognize this and are seemingly moving in this direction. Let's go to clip 46 here. Stephen Miller revealed he will be fulfilling the last message that Charlie Kirk ever gave them, the last wish of Charlie Kirk, that the government take charge, do its job, uphold its responsibility, its obligation, as they have monopolized violence in this country, use that monopoly to go after the criminal scumbags that just killed Charlie Kirk and are already gleefully plotting their next assassination. Here's Stephen Miller on what he and the Trump administration plan for these groups.
And let me tell you something I'd not share with anybody, but the last message that Charlie Kirk gave to me before he joined his creator in heaven was he said that we have to dismantle and take on the radical left organizations in this country that are fomenting violence. That was the last message that he sent me before that assassin stole him from all of us. And we are going to do that under President Trump's leadership. I don't care how. It could be a RICO charge, a conspiracy charge, conspiracy against the United States, insurrection. But we are going to do what it takes to dismantle the organizations and the entities that are fomenting riots, that are doxing, that are trying to inspire terrorism, and that are committing acts of wanton violence. It has to stop. And my message is to all of the domestic terrorists in this country spreading this evil hate. You want us to live in fear? We will not live in fear, but you will live in exile. Because the power of law enforcement under President Trump's leadership will be used to find you, will be used to take away your money, take away your power, and if you've broken the law, to take away your freedom, Sean.
Let's see action to back that up. A brilliant statement, and it looks like we're starting to see action. We need action on this. And as many people have pointed out, since the death of Charlie Kirk and the seeming impotence of the right wing in adequately dealing with this, the right wing, the Republican Party, the GOP knows how to do this. They just won't do it for us. When it comes to, you know, a college girl knocking the phone out of a guy wearing an IDF shirt, oh, it's all hands on deck. It's statements, it's lawsuits, it's investigations. They deploy the full force and weight of the federal government against the school in Florida where that happened to occur, and that was nothing. And then Charlie Kirk gets murdered, and it's all, well, maybe now's the time for unity, maybe coming together. Let's not, you know, use this to our advantage. No, let's use this. No, let's absolutely use this. And the GOP is perfectly willing to go to extraordinary measures. Other times, why not now? What's actually happening? We'll tell you about it on the other side. Stay with us. Second hour begins in 60 seconds.
Every guest we've interviewed in studio, I've given our ultramethylene blue to, and they've all been blown away. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't hype. All our supplements are great and have amazing health effects, but this one hits 99% of people within 30 minutes, and the long-term effects are even more amazing. So secure your ultramethylene blue now, the most powerful you can get on the market, at TheAlexandStore.com, and fund the tip of the spear in the fight for liberty and supercharge your own personal life. Believe me, if you don't take action and get it, you will never know how amazing it is. Over 99% of people have had incredible effects. You owe it to yourself right now to try Ultramethylene Blue, exclusively available at TheAlexandStore.com. Unless you've been hiding under a rock, everyone knows that Shilajit is one of the most incredible super nutrients, and they don't even know how it's formed deep under the earth. It's just got incredible amino acids and natural peptides that nothing else has. And what does it do for you? Everything. Your skin, your clarity, your focus. I'm on this stuff. Your wife, your girlfriend will thank you. That's just a little side issue. Shilajit's awesome, but this is the best, purest, strongest Shilajit with a whole bunch of other badass stuff in it. We throw the kitchen sink at you because we want it to work, and it will. And it funds the Second American Revolution worldwide. So get this great t-shirt design and hundreds of others, the biggest selection, at TheAlexJonesStore.com, funding the Second American Revolution worldwide. God almighty.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
I don't want to set the world on on fire.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Second hour of the Alex Jones Show is on. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I'll be taking over the War Room later this week. Alex Jones is on the road, in the air, coming back to Austin. We're bringing you all the breaking news. It's coming out from the FBI. DNA evidence leaking the suspect to the rifle that was found. I, again, still have some questions about the official story. We'll get into the official story. We'll get into the Israel connection and some very interesting things going on there. Yesterday, the ADL wrote a very long article about the accusation that Israel may have been behind it. Strangely enough, they blurred out my Twitter. They mentioned everybody except for me. We're going to ask why that is, try to figure that out. Because I want to bully the ADL, and I'll tell you why in just a little bit. But I think the awakening that's occurred, I think the primary focus right now should be in recognizing what we at InfoWars have been telling you the entire time. This is a war. We want it to be an information war. But the Democrats have been telling us for a very long time it's a real war. And we need to use the power that we have. We're in charge. It's our party at the head of this government in every branch. If we don't take this opportunity to crush the left, I mean, look at them. Look at them celebrating Trump. You'd think for a single second they would stand up if Gavin Newsom becomes president and starts putting right-wingers in camps. I mean, do you really think that's such an outrageous thing now that you see what the left is like, that you see what really lies in their hearts, is the idea that they would weaponize the federal government against the American people to utterly destroy them if they ever get back in power again? I mean, that's not even a supposition. It's a certainty. They're telling us that that's the case. Let's go to clip 128 here. This is just a small little collection of just people in office in America in the last 10 years, the Democrat Party calling explicitly for violence. Let's watch.
No one has ever been more dangerous to this country than Donald Trump, and he is a fascist to his core.
And him and shut down the city! We are at war!
We're in a war right now.
We are at war.
So you have to be willing to do whatever is necessary in order to save the country.
And that's why gloves are off.
Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic.
And yes, there are many threats to democracy. We see it with these extreme candidates.
I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings all over the country, and maybe there will be.
But you can only push people so far. And then they start to take matters into their own hands.
What the American public want is for us to bring actual weapons to this bar fight. This is an actual fight.
You know, this is literally call to arms.
The MAGA movement is a threat.
Michelle says that, you know, when they go low, we go high.
Yeah. With all due respect, if they go low, we don't go high.
When they go low, we kick them.
We take them to the mud and choke them out.
And make sure that they stay down. And you know what? Kick them when they're down, because they deserve it.
Get up in the face of some Congress people.
We are going to be in your face. We are going to be on your...
We have to fight this in the streets.
We're going to fight it in the streets.
It's time to step out of your comfort zone and step out into the streets.
To our Republican colleagues, if you do not see the light, we will bring the fire. Resist!
You and your little friend off of Twitter, y'all about to find out.
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere.
He's not going to have a good time. He may not be a system.
Yes, the last few days you woke up thinking there might be news. You're saying. There will be news sometime, just so you know.
We aren't calling for the government to step in and solve this issue because we have to. Okay, let's make that very clear. The right wing is desperate to avoid violence because we know how good we are at it. For the sake of America, the government has to step in.
Hey, Chase, good to talk to you again.
I wanted to do a quick plug on the methylene blue, on the long-term effects that it had on me. Back in 2020, I got COVID. My brother and my dad both have eczema. After I got COVID, it must have, it opened that dormant cell in my body or whatever. So I've been dealing with eczema ever since 2020. And the long-term effects of the methylene blue, 99% gone.
That's absolutely incredible. I'm so happy. Have your relatives tried it too to see the same effect?
I have been trying to get my brother to take it and he's skeptical, but I'll tell you what, I got 4 bottles sitting on my table. I think I'm just going to give him one. And I think if I just give it to him, I think he'll eventually try it.
Yeah, that's a good move.
The program leftists failed to silence. It's the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, folks. Harrison Smith sitting in for Alex Jones today. I made it through the whole first hour. I don't think I plugged once. It's very stupid of me because if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com, then we won't be here. To tell you the truth, try to read through the lines of the mainstream media. Please do go to thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com. It's your last day to get a free $10 gift on orders over $75. You don't need a coupon. You just get that free $10. Plus, if you get, I mean, it's like we give away $10 at like every step. You become a VIP member. You pay $30, you get $40. You buy one of the war bonds for $100, you get $110. And then you're getting free $10 on top of that. Look, I don't understand how the business side of things works. It seems like we're just giving away money. So, hell, take advantage. Take advantage of it, folks. It's the free $10 ultimate fundraiser sale. Your last day to get free $10 credit with every order over $75 in this critical fundraiser sale. Stock up on premium supplements and patriotic apparel today. Empower your health and show your pride while saving big. It's a limited time offer, so shop now at thealexjonesstore.com. And hell, if there's one change in behavior that comes from the brutal murder of Charlie Kirk, let it be that you are unafraid to wear patriotic merchandise out on the streets. You're not afraid to wear your American flag t-shirt, your InfoWars t-shirt, your We Are Alex Jones t-shirt, that if you go to thealexjonesstore.com and get the We Are All Charlie Kirk, a portion of those proceeds go to TPUSA. It's a fundraiser to help support Charlie's memory. So go now to thealexjonesstore.com today to keep us in the air and in the fight. And of course, you sign up for the giveaway as well, thealexjonesstore.com. Now, when it comes to the official story of this brutal political assassination, there are still some pretty glaring inconsistencies as far as I can tell. However, the more information comes out, the more it looks like the shooter was, or the suspect that they have was in fact the shooter. Again, we've got more from Kash Patel, and we can bring you more clips from what he revealed on Fox News this morning. But Clint Russell at Liberty Lockpod on X laid out the official narrative so far, that the shooter drove to campus in one outfit, then changed clothes, then shot Charlie Kirk, then, I guess, leaves with no gun on foot, but then later ditches the gun, but changes back into his prior outfit, goes back to his car, drives 250 miles home, confesses to his father, turns himself in, but now he's denying guilt and not working with the authorities. And it's like, well, okay, wait, what? I'm sorry, what exactly did he do? And there's all these questions about, did he take the gun apart? He's on video, he doesn't have a gun. Was it in his backpack? So he assembled it. How do you assemble a gun and sight it in, you know, that quickly? And then how do you disassemble it that quickly and put it back into your backpack? Or did he jump off the roof with the gun? Why can't we see it in the video? So he disassembles the gun to take it off the roof, but then he reassembles it to hide it in the woods, even though he could have left it on the roof or could have just taken it with him. He instead decides to hide it. There's some gaps here that I look forward to the authorities filling in, because so far they're not doing a great job. They're not doing a great job explaining how all of these things could be true, because some of them seem very clearly contradictory. That being said, there's a lot of information coming out about the transgender movement, specifically in Utah, and the violence that they very openly advertise, like this from Tony Segura, or Saruga rather, armed queers group trained radical Marxists to shoot just miles from where Charlie Kirk was murdered. This group trains gay, queer, and transgender people to arm themselves and fight against capitalism in the American system. There is at this time no evidence linking the group to Tyler Robinson, but clearly it's just one of a great number of these groups arming themselves for radical action. Nick Sortor, where are all the Democrat retards who said Charlie Kirk killer is a straight right MAGA Republican? They've gone into hiding now. It's almost like they realize the public won't believe a guy sleeping with a transgender furry is really a MAGA Republican. Yeah, well, look, frankly, I don't know what they're willing to believe. I don't think reality has anything to do with what their positions are, actually. Let's go to clip 53 here. This is some of the information coming out about this shooter. This was a neighbor of the shooter. Talks about a lot of suspicious activity around the house where this guy and his trans roommate slash lover were living. Clip 53, this is the neighbor of Charlie Kirk and about what he saw prior to the assassination.
With him.
Were they holding hands?
Yeah, they were. So, yeah, they drove off in his car, the Dodge Challenger.
The time you saw them or this week?
It was about the time I saw them. So
how long ago was that?
I would say about 2 weeks ago.
And did they, so they looked like they were couples?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was dressed all in black?
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And you thought he was weird?
Yeah, I definitely, yeah.
What was weird about him?
Just the way he walked and just the way I've seen him. I've never seen really anybody dressed all in black with a mask on, and I thought that was just quite weird.
For those who've never seen the roommate, describe that person for us.
He did have freckles on his face. For the haircut, he did have, it was a weird haircut, it was kind of a mushroom shaped one. He was, I would say, he didn't come out much, but definitely a few other, like, just a little bit at a time.
There's some published reports out there that this individual, the roommate, may have been transitioning. Did that correlate with what you saw?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so he was going to have an operation to be to turn into a woman.
Yeah, and I think he's getting ready for that.
Sorry, in what way do you think that?
I remember them talking about a doctor's appointment. It was about 2 weeks ago, I would say.
And they were kissing?
Yeah.
Do you know, where did you see them kissing?
Just coming out. I was riding with my bike, so I didn't see the whole thing, but yeah, I saw them.
And when did you hear them talking about a doctor's appointment?
I would say about the same time that they came out, so that one time, yeah.
Where were you standing for that?
I was just riding by here. Okay. So.
And you're able to hear snippets of their conversation?
Yeah.
But you were sure that they were a couple, but you had only seen them together once?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, random guys don't hold hands and definitely don't kiss. So, I would have tried to stop him if I knew it was him, like, before. I definitely do not like the fact that he was living close to me. It was covered with police tape, a ton of police cars. We had a guy sitting up on the hill with a sniper. And SWAT trucks, and definitely a few helicopters, and a drone as well.
What was going through your mind when you said that?
I was like, what is going on? And I asked the police officer, I'm like, did a killing happen here? They're like, I can't tell you. And so I called my grandma, found out that the guy that shot Kirk lived right close to me. So for Charlie Kirk, I knew him over the years. Like, I didn't know him personally, but I've watched his videos before. And so,
So there's the neighbor of the shooter describing some very, very odd behavior from the shooter, and his live-in boyfriend, I guess, is who they're saying he is. Again, what's come out today is that Cash Patel has confirmed DNA evidence match in Kirk assassination, saying that this suspect's DNA was found on the rifle and elsewhere at the scene. You also have a letter that he apparently wrote saying that he was going to kill Charlie Kirk. And how this relates to the overall trans movement on the internet is, of course, that there is a mass amount of radicalization going on, preying on these already unstable, mentally ill people who then get put on an insane variety of drugs that further destabilizes them, and then they're fed a constant stream of radicalizing propaganda. And this needs to be handled. And again, there is not, it's not like we have to come up with a way to handle this. We have to do what the left has been doing, because they've been doing it against peaceful right-wingers who've never done anything wrong. And we are doing it against a murderous cult of psychopaths that is agitating violence out in the open. So somehow, when it's right-wingers, when it's Catholic fathers of 12 protesting abortion clinics, there's no hesitation, there's no waffling. They send the FBI SWAT team to kick down his door at 2 a.m. and to haul him away and make his wife miscarry. There's no issue, there's no problem, there's no second guessing, there's no, ah, gee, is this really in line with our... No, they just do it. It's time that we just do it, that we just do to them what they've been doing to us, because when they do it to us, it's tyranny, because we haven't killed them and they've killed us. So now we need to do it, and we need to do it with all of the force that we can muster. Again, some people realize this. Some people are recognizing this. Donald Trump, in fact, is one of them. Clip 137 here. I've got so many clips. I've got hundreds of clips today. 137 is Donald Trump saying things that the rest of the Republican Party aren't saying. Saying the truth about the situation we're in, how to deal with it. Here's Donald Trump in an interview just a few days ago, showing that he at least recognizes the threat and what has to be done. Let's watch.
Organizations on the left, you anticipate investigating and you talk about the threat.
Well, the problem is on the left. If you look at the problem is on the left. It's not on the right, like some people like to say on the right. The problem we have is on the left. And when you look at the agitators, you look at the scum that speaks so badly of our country, the American flag burnings all over the place, that's the left, that's not the right.
Do you plan on investigating?
We'll see. We'll be announcing. They're already under investigation. You know, they're already under major investigation. A lot of the people that you would traditionally say are on the left.
They're already under investigation?
Already under investigation.
So he's saying they're already under investigation. We need more. We need it public, because part of doing this, part of it is actually getting the dangerous people off the streets, actually shutting down their funding networks. Tangible action against them needs to happen just to physically stop them from killing any more people. That's necessary. But equal to that is the message that you're sitting to the left. You aren't going to get away with this. You're not just, you know, innocently talking to people on Discord. You're plotting murders. And we know. And so you're going to be arrested. That's just what needs that. They need to get that message. There needs to be tangible action. There need to be arrest. Some of these people funding it need to be hauled in front of Congress and questioned. What happened to the social media platform Parler after January 6th? It was completely dismantled. They hauled the CEO in front of Congress, they lambasted him, they basically shut it down completely. Why? Because some amount of organization was done there for a peaceful protest that the police attacked and killed five protesters, and then Parler was shut down because of that. Despite the fact that most of the planning was done on Facebook and Twitter, they and you know other platforms like that, they decided to go ahead and go after Parler because they wanted to anyway, and this gave them the excuse. Now we have a platform like Blue Sky that has 10,000 times the amount of vitriolic rhetoric, calls to violence, justification for violence. It's everywhere over there. And again, this is, I mean, they set their own trap. We just have to close it. The left has gotten away with things for so long, they don't even know they have to hide it anymore. So they're not hiding it. They're all just out there on their personal profiles saying the most insane stuff. They are just there waiting to be picked up, waiting to be rounded up, waiting to be questioned. waiting to be investigated. We don't even have to, find them. They've presented themselves to us. We have to take action here. And let's go to clip 125 here. This is Sam Hyde, again, from that incredibly powerful video he put out yesterday. We showed the first 2 minutes in the first few minutes of this show. Here's Sam Hyde explaining to the Republicans, and Donald Trump in particular, there's a very brief window of opportunity here that we must seize. Here's Sam Hyde.
If you ever survive an assassin's bullet in that scenario, I would imagine that means something like you have been ordained by God to do God's work on the planet. You've been spared, and you've been spared in such a dramatic and improbable and miraculous fashion that you have a mandate from heaven to do God's work on earth. Now, is Trump, is he talking about getting into heaven?
He has been talking about getting into heaven lately, apparently.
He's a mandate from heaven. And now what he has with this confluence of events is a sort of open runway to enact whatever policies he could imagine in his wildest dreams. He has a blank check to do whatever he wants, in my opinion.
And a limited time to do it.
And a very limited time to do it. I don't think that's an overstatement. I don't think that's a, I don't think that's crazy to say. Is that crazy to say?
No.
Valentine?
I suppose it would be a means in which it would make Charlie Kirk, it would make him not have died in vain.
Hmm.
That's also true.
Yeah. There's a lot of things at play that make what that chick said completely false. Like, she said that he's not martyr material, which is what I think she means is he's not a target that one would expect. I think the truth behind that is he's not a guy that even remotely had it coming, not that anybody does, yeah. But he's not even on the radar of guys that deserve that. And what he represents is because he's such a non-martyr material, he represents that it could happen to everybody. And I see a lot of people saying, that's my uncle's politics, that's my grandfather's mm-hmm. politics. And they are now realizing that, oh, they want my loved ones dead.
Yeah.
For holding some of the most benign political stances.
This is a historical moment, and there's the charge is there, the critical mass is there to do historical shit in a way that it hasn't been since 2015. There hasn't been a moment like this, arguably, at any point in Trump's presidency or in Biden's presidency, and I think this is going to define him. It's time for Trump and the people in his administration to get off their asses and do something. He's been able to enact policies like Project 2025 when it comes to punishing pro-Palestinian demonstrators, but so far that's all he's been able to get with this.
And I completely agree. And I think Charlie would agree too. During one of his last Twitter posts was about weaponizing and using the death of Irina Zhurchka, not in a cynical, self-serving way, but in the way that it should be used as a warning, as a spark that ignites a fire, as a crime that is so visceral and powerful that you change laws because of it. We need to see very deliberate and expansive action from the Trump administration immediately. Immediately. I don't know why it hasn't been done already. I don't know why there haven't been a dozen arrests already. I mean, we've got internet users like Aesthetica at ANC underscore aesthetics on X. And this was posted by Elon Musk, laying out multiple examples of transgender people in Utah, around this area, seemingly having foreknowledge of this attack. That alone should get them arrested. Should get them arrested. And hey, if it turns out they're just like, I was just spouting nonsense, I didn't know, I have no communications, here's my phone, go through it. I just thought it'd be funny to say, you know, Charlie Kirk's going to die on September 10th. I didn't actually know. And if that's the case, great. Then figure that out. But if they showed any evidence that they knew what was going to happen, did not warn the authorities, did not step in to stop it, they should be arrested already, today. Why haven't they been? Maybe we'll get to interview Cash Patel one day and I'll ask him. So far, Fox News doesn't seem interested in asking that question. Aesthetica at ANC underscore aesthetics. This is reposted from Elon Musk saying, sounds like it's true. Posted this thread. I'm now 100% confident that Charlie's assassination was carried out by radical left-wing transgender terror cell. Let's get into the evidence. First of all, the assassin, Tyler Robinson, was living with a transgender partner. We just heard from the neighbor that he saw them interacting romantically, holding hands, kissing. It was not just a random roommate from Craigslist, right? The individual who was a male transitioning to female is fully cooperating with the FBI. Sources say the FBI has texts and other communication between Robinson and that individual that helped FBI authorities solidify that Robinson was indeed the shooter. Two of the bullets found in Tyler's rifle had engravings consistent with radical far-left transgender ideology. The OWO reference is a reference to men who like trans women. The catch fascist is another, you know, phrase often associated with transgenderism. Number three, Tyler's transgender boyfriend is friends with a transgender account on TikTok and X that goes by the name ChermBum75M. He apparently saw Tyler on June 30th. Minutes after Charlie was confirmed dead, this transgender posted, "We effing did it." We effing did it. This is a friend of the assassin who had met with him on July 30th. But this wasn't the only transgender account that had prior knowledge of the assassination. At least two other transgender people had posted in advance that something would happen to Charlie during his speaking event at UVU, with Omar at Nadra Galves, I guess, says, "Charlie Kirk is coming to my college tomorrow. I really hope someone evaporates him literally. Let's say something big will happen tomorrow." Again, arrest this person. Why has this person not been arrested yet? Why don't we know his name? Why isn't the FBI giving us reports about his whereabouts and the questioning proceeding with him? Five, we know Tyler was very active on transgender discords, a hotbed for radicalization and far-left extremism. Was this Discord server used to plan the attack? Six, we know that Tyler was given the rifle and did not purchase it himself. Who gave it to him? This was obviously a combined effort involving multiple people, so one can only assume he got help from his transgender associates. That's it for now. I'll update this thread as more information becomes available. But there's at least six examples of far-left trans terrorists having advanced knowledge. Here's another one at Fujo Shincel. Well, that's it. You guys, I have something big coming soon. Just be sure to check the news. You'll know it when you see it. Another chud bites the dust. Now we know Tyler Robinson had a furry account, which is a sexual fetish, very closely associated with transgenderism. The community notes are trying to discount these findings. And that really is just the beginning, and in fact, this was posted several days ago from sort of an anonymous count on Twitter, ANC underscore aesthetics, reposted by Elon Musk. Since then, the authorities have come out to confirm this reality, the exclusive from freebeacon.com, FBI investigating social media accounts that appear to indicate foreknowledge of Kirk assassination. So I ask again, have these people been arrested? Are they being questioned? I mean, how long after January 6th was it before people who weren't even there were having their doors kicked in because they'd communicated with somebody? They sent Stuart Rhodes of the Oath Keepers, they sentenced him to 2 decades in prison because he was on a chat with somebody who happened to be in the Capitol. Where's a similar treatment of these terrorists operating inside the United States? We'll be right back.
Well, I'm a 10-foil hat, wearing meat-eating son of a gun, loving fun, loving hot-blooded Texian, two-stepping outlaw.
The official Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit, 100% lifetime guarantee, high quality aluminum. Got the famous shot of me there with the aluminum hat. 50 square feet, 100% lifetime guarantee. Protect your mind from the globalist. I love the idea they had of an Alex Jones stress ball. People really love it. That's available. You know, fun little things, not just the widest selection of Patriot t-shirts and ball caps and hoodies and sweaters, but cool stuff like this. But now we have the official Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit. So get your Alex Jones tinfoil hat now at thealexjonesstore.com. Every guest we've interviewed in studio, I've given our ultramethylene blue to, and they've all been blown away. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't hype. All our supplements are great and have amazing health effects, but this one hits 99% of people within 30 minutes, and the long-term effects are even more amazing. So secure your ultramethylene blue now, the most powerful you can get on the market, at thealexjonesstore.com, and fund the tip of the spear in the fight for liberty and supercharge your own personal life. Believe me, if you don't take action and get it, you will never know how amazing it is. Over 99% of people have had incredible effects. You owe it to yourself right now to try Ultramethylene Blue, exclusively available at thealexjonesstore.com. Ultimate Life Force. That's the name of the new product. This is hands down the strongest, most powerful spike protein detox out there with triple action, taking all the major best-selling certified safe formulas and integrating it in to just a massive daily dose. And it isn't just to clean out your blood, ladies and gentlemen. It is so good for your whole body. It's got 400 milligrams of NAC alone. That is the precursor to glutathione and just does incredible things for your whole body. Not just that, the energy, the stamina, all of it. Ladies and gentlemen, we're so excited about this formula. I don't have time to get into all the other great ingredients in it. Go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and check it out for yourself. This is so game-changing. Lesser formulas have already helped so many people that I've personally bought them for and, you know, given them to friends and family. This is amazing. Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com for 50% off. Ultimate Fish Oil is now available at InfoWarsStore.com after being sold out for more than 6 months. And we give it the name Ultimate, like so many of other products, because it is the highest grade, the very best you're going to find anywhere. Now, most people know how great fish oil is, but not all fish oil is made equal. A lot of it has been homogenized, or basically boiled and cooked off, and it loses almost all of its good effect. This is the highest grade fish oil from three different amazing sources. Listen to this. Arctic krill oil is known as the best essential fatty acid. Then another well-known top one, wild anchovy oil and high-quality wild-caught salmon, also one of the top forms of it. It is back in stock. It is not just good for your cardiovascular system. It's good for everything. Take a few hours before you sleep, and a lot of folks have amazing dreams on it. You ever notice you eat like a good piece of fish that's fresh? You also have great dreams. You want to experience this. It's so good for your brain, your heart, everything. Ultimate Fish Oil, back in stock, InfoWarsStore.com.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Alex Jones Show, because there is a war on for your mind.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today on this Monday, September 15th transmission. We still have a lot to talk about. You know, a lot of things sort of spiral out from this. Obviously, people are waking up to the reality of the brainwashing of the left, the real sickness at the heart of our fellow Americans. We hesitate to call them, but they are here, and they are dangerous, and they are acting as if we can't even hear them or see them, and they have to be rounded up. We'll talk about the transgender connection to this and the radical transgender groups that are being formed from this and discovered. Utah apparently is a hotbed of these things. Right now, J.D. Vance is hosting Charlie Kirk's show, and he's interviewing Tucker Carlson, and Tucker Carlson is talking about how Charlie Kirk's death shouldn't be used by bad actors to do things that Charlie opposed in life. And of course, he's talking about Israel, and Israel using Charlie's death to try to get more support for it, even though Charlie Kirk, towards the end of his life, was breaking with Israel. It was becoming a big problem for him with his donors. And of course, this is become a major topic of conversation. In a very large part because of a tweet I did a month before Charlie Kirk's death, in which I revealed that Charlie Kirk was afraid that Israel would kill him. Now, again, as I've said a million times, when somebody is murdered, and yet before being killed, they were telling people, I think this person's going to kill me, and then they get killed, it's that person that you go and look at to act like that is evidence of bias or anti-Semitism is ridiculous. It's the first suspect. It's the same in any murder case where the person says, I think my husband's going to kill me, and then she gets killed. It's the husband you look at first. This is completely logical, completely ridiculous to frame it as anything other than following an obvious trail of logic. And it would be one thing if these theories only came about after the death, but the fact that I preempted it a month earlier by accident, not a random supposition, random guess, but actually because of information I'd been told, it puts everything in a very interesting perspective. But there's a collision here because it's almost a separate topic to whether Israel had a hand in the assassination of Charlie Kirk, which I think they perfectly well could have. I mean, there's a great documentary about, and we'll have to play it in October on the anniversary of the shooting of the shooting in Las Vegas. I think it's by a YouTuber named Coop, if I'm not mistaken. It's a three-part, very thorough documentary. And you forget what they're capable of, what the powers that be are able to crush and silence is unbelievable. During the Las Vegas shooting, that the official story says was Stephen Paddock, one guy shooting from this one room, end of story, no explanation as to a motive, no explanation as to how he could have possibly pulled it off, just shut up, it was Stephen Paddock, no more questions, please. By the way, he was a CIA agent, he was running guns, but that's beside the point. All that's in the documentary. Thousands of calls came in from all over Las Vegas of shootings taking place before and after the shooting at the concert. The shooting at the concert clearly had evidence that the bullets were not coming from the window of the Mandalay Bay. Like the fact that one bullet was lodged inside the base of the bass player, despite the bass player facing directly away from the Mandalay Bay. Little things like that. And you go, how did they cover this up? If you have thousands of people who all witness things that are contrary to the official story, and yet the official story is the only thing that you hear. So I just say that as an example of, like, just because we have a suspect, just because there's a lot of evidence to show that the suspect is it, I'm not willing to bet my life on it. I'll look at it. I'll look at the official story and see if it corresponds to reality as I see it. Some cases it does in this case, in some cases it doesn't, right? It sort of follows that these radical trans people would want to kill Charlie Kirk. Clearly they wanted to. I mean, they're celebrating it now. That's perfectly in line. Then there's questions about where the gun went and how he was carrying it and why he disassembled it and reassembled it. And that doesn't make any sense. So I'll question that until I get some good answers from it. But point is, this is just sort of the world that we live in now. I'm not ever going to trust the official story fully. I'm always going to have questions. And you always have to kind of just have that caveat, have that asterisk under any conclusion that it could be completely different, could be something utterly unlike what the official story is, but they'll cover it up and they'll do it with, you know, incredible ubiquity. Because again, you can have situations like the shooting in Las Vegas where you have thousands, if not tens of thousands of witnesses whose testimony directly contradicts the official story. And yet here we are, what is it, 5-6 years later, and, you know, nobody thinks about it. Nobody's trying to get to, you know, dig down and find justice for this. So the point is, you cannot overestimate the ability of the powers that be to cover up reality and to provide you with an alternative. So that's a little caveat, just saying that we don't know who did what at this point, but it's almost beside the point because the real thing that I think is coming to the fore and bubbling to the surface is the fact that Israel has a stranglehold on right-wing media. And that fact alone is very concerning. And I talked a little bit about it yesterday. Over this weekend, I got more calls from people in right-wing media than probably the last 2 years combined. They all wanted to go off the record and they were all telling me exactly the same story. It's way worse than you know. The pressure is way greater than you know. The fear is way greater than you know. And I got people in multiple branches of government telling me that they think this stinks and there's more to the story and we're not getting the full picture. And so when you talk about, you know, Israel's involvement in this, it's not even necessarily that they for sure were behind the assassination. It's about the pressure that Charlie Kirk was under before his death to silence him when speaking about a foreign nation, about American priorities coming second to those of a foreign nation and the, you know, funders that by virtue of giving money to organizations like TPUSA then feel as though they have a right to tell it what to cover and what not to cover. And also, as Sam Hyde pointed out, the only time that we've seen the Trump administration really aggressively pursue an agenda, it's for the benefit of Israel, and it's extremely frustrating. And so I guess we'll just continue about that topic for now, because I do still want to get back to all of the transgender associations here. But we've got this video of Tucker Carlson on with J.D. Vance, Vice President J.D. Vance, who's now hosting the Charlie Kirk show. If we can go to this Tucker Carlson clip, I want to see what he has to say. Because that's the other thing, is that everybody who was friends with Charlie in right-wing media is seemingly making this about Israel. Tucker Carlson, Megyn Kelly. You know, Tucker Carlson went on with Megyn Kelly. She was doing a memorial show for Charlie Kirk. He comes on and he says, you know, obviously about what great guy Charlie was. And he's, you know, he says sort of the normal memorializing stuff. But then Tucker Carlson makes a point to go, Charlie Kirk stood up against the warmongers who wanted to go to war with Iran. He told Donald Trump this. He specifically went to D.C. to try to intervene and stop Donald Trump from going along with the campaign to bomb Iran. And he suffered immensely because of it. And he got massive backlash over it. So why is that the thing Tucker Carlson wanted to make his appearance on Megyn Kelly about? Why is Candace Owens saying that Netanyahu is lying about the letter that was sent him? Why are all of these people that were good friends with Charlie coming out and making this about Israel? Again, not necessarily that they had anything to do with the assassination, but about the fact that Israel has a stranglehold on right-wing media. And then again, I'm getting calls from people, and it's like they want me to tell the audience what they know, but they don't want to be included, and they don't want any information that can identify them. And it's like, you just tell people, what are you doing? Why are you holding these secrets? They're like in meetings where they hear the pressure being applied, where they hear the threats being made, and then they're just like really quietly share it with everybody. Oh, do you know this? And it's like, this is crazy. We cannot have an America First movement that's controlled by a foreign nation. This is ridiculous. And Charlie Kirk was clearly fighting that fight. And I think he sincerely liked Israel, and everything I've heard, he you know, sincerely had a, you know, sort of religious affiliation with Israel that was sincere. And you can even hear when he talks about Israel and he's talking about it in a negative light, he's doing so for the ultimate benefit of Israel, right? He's like, I think we need to cover this way because the youth is going away from Israel, and here's what you have to do to solve it. And you can't just relentlessly justify all of Israel's, you know, most insane actions. You're losing the youth. He was actually trying to help them. So again, it's all of this stuff sort of spirals out from this, but I think it's all equally important. Yes, we need to focus on dismantling the leftist organizations that are inspiring violence and coordinating and agitating for that. But the frustration comes when Israel's priorities come first and we're made less safe because all of the resources of the federal government are going towards going over social media accounts for visa holders to make sure they're, you know, sufficiently pro-Israel. It's like, well, what the hell? We've got people literally murdering us and you're out there making sure people don't talk badly about a foreign state. This is bad. And then, of course, you've got bill after bill after bill being passed. You've got half of the Congress in Israel on an AIPAC trip today. Republicans are there now and Democrats are going next week and they're kissing the wall. And it's almost like they're doing it on purpose. It's almost like they're trying to piss us off, to be honest with you. And I think there may be part of that there, actually. I think, you know, you can't pass anti-Semitism laws to, you know, destroy the First Amendment if you don't have the anti-Semitism to point to. So, you know, they got to create that somehow in order to get the excuse to pass the laws to shut down speech. I don't know exactly what the thought from the Israeli leadership is at this point, but I think they are in a very tenuous position, and I think there's a reason that so many of the people close to Charlie Kirk are making his relationship with Israel sort of the centerpiece of what they're talking about following his death. Let's go to this clip of Tucker Carlson talking to J.D. Vance.
Good faith is the measure, and I have to say, I think now is exactly the wrong time to appropriate the memory of someone and the emotion that comes with that, the really intense emotion that all of us feel at his murder, and use it for your own parochial ends. Like, he stood for this, you know, and I think the reason that Charlie was able to bridge the gap, particularly in foreign policy, is because he had, for example, genuine affection for Israel, which he expressed to me in private many, many times. Like, I love Correct. Israel. I don't think we should have another forever war, regime change war against Iran. And I think that made complete sense to me. I sort of agree with that, actually. And so it allowed both sides to talk to him because they felt like this person doesn't hate me. It doesn't need to get existential. It's not about disliking me or some weird bigotry. But I don't think it's helpful for people to jump in, particularly foreign heads of state, to say, this is what, you know, he lived for my cause or whatever. That's disgusting, actually. Don't do that. That turns everybody off. You don't help your own cause by doing that. And it's also literally untrue. So I just hope that we can continue in, I'm not exaggerating, the spirit that he operated in, which is one of love for other people, including people we disagree with, and don't make it, you know, as small bore as that. That doesn't help.
So again, an interesting choice of topic for Tucker Carlson to center his memorialization of Charlie Kirk on. And I think there's something to that. Now, again, I wonder if we should just stick on this topic for a little bit, because obviously it's a major topic of conversation online. And I, of course, had a lot to do with that, not on purpose, which again is why I sort of find myself in this weird position where it was my tweet that sort of the starting point where a lot of people put the killing of Charlie Kirk in context with him moving away from supporting Israel and the fact that TPUSA was such a powerful force in this country. That being said, I don't see a lot of evidence that it was Israel so far. I wouldn't expect to if it was. And again, it wasn't a month ago that the Israeli cybersecurity director was caught red-handed trying to rape an American girl, and the American authorities helped him to escape. So it's like, I don't know if Israel killed Charlie Kirk, but I know that if they did, we'd never find out. I know that if Israel was directly responsible for the assassination of Charlie Kirk, I don't trust our government to do anything about that. I would expect our government actually to cover it up and to provide the patsy. And that's very troubling and yet true. The Gray Zone article that came out from Max Blumenthal. Now, Max Blumenthal was supposed to be on with us today. Something came up. He's going to be on with us tomorrow. So I'll be hosting the second half of the show tomorrow, and Max Blumenthal will join me then. I announced it yesterday. I confirmed with my source, who told me that Charlie Kirk was afraid that Israel would kill him. And I asked, did you talk to Max Blumenthal? And he said no. So Max Blumenthal has a different source than me saying exactly the same thing about this, which is something I think, again, worth looking into and worth asking about. And of course, if Israel feels that this is unfair, I suggest they stop using assassination so regularly. Then people won't suspect you. That's a pretty easy solution, I think. I think if you don't want people to assume that you're willing to use assassination against anybody anywhere in the world, you need to stop openly doing that everywhere all the time and then bragging about it. So that would be my advice to Israel. If they're so upset that people are thinking they killed Charlie Kirk, stop killing people, stop assassinating people. Pretty simple solution, actually. Now, the ADL wrote an article about this. Anti-Semitic and anti-Israel conspiracy theories follow fatal shooting of Charlie Kirk. And they left me out of this for some reason, which is a little bit odd. They mentioned Paul Miller. Not really super familiar with him. They mentioned Stu Peters. They mentioned Ian Carroll. They show my tweet, but then they block my tweet out. Here's the tweet. I'm not going to name names, but I was told by somebody close to Charlie Kirk that Charlie thinks Israel will kill him if he turns against him. I was responding to Ian Carroll. And they blurred out my name, my picture, and my handle on X. Now, I don't know why they did that. In other articles, they do mention my name. In this one, they don't. They mention Syrian girl. Again, where am I? Why am I not being mentioned? Now, maybe I should be happy that I'm not being mentioned, because obviously it's not fun being accused of being anti-Semitic by the ADL, as I explained yesterday in a video on X. Not because, I'm trying to pursue the truth. I am very suspicious of Israel. I treat them like any other country. I treat the Jews like any other religious or ethnic group. It's all very simple, and I love everybody. And then I get accused of being anti-Semitic, and then I make it abundantly clear. I'm just very straightforward. And I think that confuses people. I think people are confused by my lack of rhetoric. That I'm not trying to justify anything. I just want to make it perfectly clear. I'll just write a tweet that's like, oh, by the way, I love Jewish people. Just going to put that out there. By the way, just to remind everybody, I actually genuinely have great affection for the Jewish people as a group and as individuals. Just letting you know. And then people come up and they go, did you get the call? What, are you scared? Wait, you turned on it? And it's like, I'll tell you my reasoning. I'll tell you the reason I do that. And it's not that complicated. It's because we might know the ADL for what they are. The right wing on Twitter identified the ADL as what they are. Foreign agitators, a ethnic supremacy group. We get that. The vast majority of people in America still have respect for these institutions. And that include things like my Jewish friends and their grandmothers who get the ADL newsletter and read that the boy they met at the wedding is actually a Nazi that wants to kill them all. And it's like, what the hell? Why? But that's how it works. When you're put in an ADL article, it convinces little Jewish grandmothers who you love that you want to kill them. And it's crazy. And so I just like to put it out there. I don't want to kill anybody. I don't hate anybody. I love everybody. The ADL is not your friend. They are not telling you the truth. They do not stand for you. They're bad. It's not that complicated. It's actually pretty simple. So why didn't they mention me? Other people are going, well, you know, maybe you're protected. InfoWars is protected because you're not anti-Semitic. And it's like, well, for one thing, no, we're not anti-Semitic. We're not anti-anything, really, except for the devil. And if you think that the ADL has not had its horns out for InfoWars, they have been our, like, primary adversary for the last 20 years. They hate us. So, I mean, what that goes to show you is it's not actually about anti-Semitism. Actually, you can be a platform that very explicitly is not anti-Semitic, and they'll still try to destroy you because it's not about protecting Jews. It's not about protecting people from anti-Semitism. It's a weapon in the tool of the bad guys to co-opt the suffering of a people group so that they can act as willing human shields to defend the bad guys from consequences of their actions. So don't let them use you in that way is what I'm saying. And so then I'm taunting the ADL. I'm bullying the ADL. I'm asking the ADL, say my name. Why won't you say my name? Other people suggesting maybe they don't want people going to my profile because then they'll see the truth. Maybe they prefer to send people to profiles that are able to be classed as anti-Semitic, will have some vitriol and some hatred on their page that the ADL wants to advertise, wants you to go see. They don't want you going to my account where I say, I love Jews, and here's Israel probably killing Charlie Kirk. I got no problem with Jews. I don't have a problem with Israel, really. I want them to just stop killing people. It's not actually that complicated. So I don't know why they didn't include my name, but they didn't. So now I'm bullying them. And I was telling this to my wife yesterday, And she's going, you know, okay, but like, why are you antagonizing him? Like, cause you know, we're sitting there watching Benjamin Netanyahu having to respond to my tweet on Newsmax and being flustered and not knowing. And it's like, okay, maybe we'd rather not be on the radar of Mossad. That would have been, it would have been nice to not have my name in, you know, Bibi Netanyahu's awareness. But what am I supposed to do? I'm just telling the truth. I'm like, I'm not trying to cause an international incident. It just happens. I don't know why. I don't know why. God just puts me places and makes me do things. And then and here we are. And so I'm like, I'm not agitated. I'm not like trying to get attention. So then yesterday when the ADL leaves my name off and I start tagging them and saying, say my name. Say my name, Jonathan Greenblatt. Why don't you say my name? Say it. Say my name. My wife's like, well, okay, now you kind of are antagonizing them. And I wanted to make this point. It is right to bully the ADL. It's right to bully the ADL because they have no legitimacy. Nobody voted for them. Nobody agreed that they should be the self-appointed hall monitors and tattletales of our country. They're nobody. They have no legit, they have nothing they can say to me. They have no right to tell anybody what they can say, what they can think, what they can believe. They're self-appointed busybodies and ethnic supremacists. They're nobody. Why would I be scared of the ADL? They're just some group of people who have no authority, no legitimacy, no right. So I think it's okay. I think it's good to bully the ADL. It's why I try to. I used to do it more often, but refer to somebody like Jonathan Greenblatt, the CEO of ADL. Oh, and by the way, they're not just a nobody. They are a enforcement arm of a foreign state. They are a censorship and spy apparatus run by Israel against the American people. So it's worse than them being nobody, but at the base, they're nobody. So I used to always refer to Jonathan Greenblatt as like some random name, because who is he? He's nobody. He's just some dude. Might as well call him Harvey Smith. Harvey Smith is furious that people are saying this. I don't give a damn what that guy says. He's nobody. He's a worm. He's not even American. He consistently is caught referring to we when he's talking about Israel. He doesn't even think of himself as American. So I'm going to let some foreign worm-looking dude assert his authority over us? Screw you. Say my name, Jonathan Greenblatt. Why won't you say my name? Tell people where they can go to find not the conspiracy theory about Charlie Kirk being murdered by Israel, but the fact that a month before I predicted it. Why won't you tell people that? Jonathan Greenblatt, Harvey, whatever your name is.
Hey Chase, good to talk to you again. I wanted to do a quick plug on the methylene blue, on the long-term effects that it had on me. Back in 2020, I got COVID. My brother and my dad both have eczema. After I got COVID, it must have, it opened that dormant cell in my body or whatever. So I've been dealing with eczema ever since 2020. And the long-term effects of the methylene blue, 99% gone.
That's absolutely incredible. I'm so happy. Have your relatives tried it too to see the same effect?
I have been trying to get my brother to take it and he's skeptical, but I'll tell you what, I got 4 bottles sitting on my table. I think I'm just going to give him one. And I think if I just give it to him, I think he'll eventually try it.
Yeah, that's so, a good move.
It's almost poetic, the products that we sell, because yes, they are the best. Yes, it is the best price for the highest quality. Yes, they are third-party tested. It's almost poetic because as we advocate for humanity, what we sell to you is that which makes you or allows you to make yourself a better version of yourself. Whether it's getting the methylene blue, which helps you with focus and energy and mental clarity, or ultimate life force, which makes your body healthier in so many ways I don't have the time to explain to you. Whether it's the Shilajit that gives you incredible vitality, or the ultimate burn, which ensures that your metabolism is optimal, or the optimal human, which is everything the body needs. You see, we're fighting for your mind, your body, and your soul, not just with the products that we sell, but with the message of this network. We have to have the truth. We have to have freedom of speech. We have to have our rights, because folks, we're about ready to go into an artificial intelligence war, into a space war, the likes of which humanity couldn't even dream of, even in science fiction. So please go to thealexjonesstore.com right now, not just for your mind and your body, but for your species.
leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order. It's Alex Jones.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Third hour of the Alex Jones Show is on. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. He'll be back tomorrow to host the first half of the show. Then I'll be interviewing Max Blumenthal in the second half. He is working on a follow-up to the article that he posted just a few days ago that, if nothing else, confirmed what I said, confirmed my information that I was getting from my source. He has a different source saying pretty much exactly the same thing, that towards the end of his life, Charlie Kirk was battling it out with his Israeli donors. Now, whether those are actual Israelis or American Israelis, I'm not really sure. But the ADL has picked this up. They did not include me, though, in their article, which is interesting since I'm the one that sort of started it all accidentally. And, you know, I was going to move on. I was going to go back to some of this stuff, but I have this thing. I have this thing that might be diagnosable. I don't know if it's at the level of like oppositional defiance disorder, but I struggle to do what people tell me, I have to admit. So I spend the first 2 hours of this show, hour 45 minutes, talking about transgenderism, talking about the terrorist networks, talking about the inspiration of Charlie Kirk and all the memorials around the world. I talk about what Kash Patel has said and all this stuff. And then we go to this video of Tucker Carlson. He's talking about how Charlie was standing up against Israel and telling people not to go to Iran. And so I spend about 15 minutes talking about Israel's association as it is like the primary topic of conversation online. And I have something to do with it. And then I check Twitter and during the commercial break and I got people going, Jews, 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 Jews. All you ever talk about is Jews. And it's like 2 hours. Didn't even mention it. 15 minutes on topic because of a breaking video, and it's because I'm anti-Semitic, right? And actually what I'm doing the whole time is actually explaining that these organizations that cloak themselves in Judaism are actually working against the average Jew and weaponizing their historical trauma and the brainwashing they've gone through as a consequence of the Holocaust stories they were told when they were little, and they're using them as human shields to defend a bunch of decrepit billionaires that are perfectly willing, by the way, to sacrifice every Jew in America if it means that they can, you know, destroy America and move the center of power more towards China and establish a one-world government in Israel. So it's not even, I'm not even talking about Jews. I'm talking about the massive cabals of billionaires, many of whom are Jewish and who use Judaism just like they use Christianity, just like they use Islam, to try to destroy people's sovereignty and create a one-world government. So I was going to move on, but now I got people telling me I'm not supposed to talk about this, so I think I'm going to talk about it more. No, I think I'm actually going to double down on this. Don't tell me what to say, all right? So just don't try to tell me what to say, and then I'll just talk about other stuff probably. But here you are trying to stop me from talking about this, and I think that needs to be addressed. I think the issue here is that we haven't been able to talk about this. I think it creates a lot bigger problems than just addressing the issue in a calm way at the beginning rather than allow it to fester and to silence people and to blackmail people. Because again, I've received so many calls from people all over the right-wing sphere, politics, media, people close to Charlie, and they all tell the same story. Everybody is scared to death of Israel. They're all terrified that if they say the wrong thing, they'll be the next one with a bullet in their head. Guess how you get to that point? By going along with it, by staying silent. If everybody that I talked to this weekend at once came out and said, hey, Israel has got a bullet, I got a gun to my head, you think they can handle everybody standing up at once like that? By the way, Donald Trump is in that group. According to the Gray Zone article, according to everybody I've talked to, including Alex Jones yesterday, saying Donald Trump hates Netanyahu, but does everything he wants. He despises Netanyahu, but constantly takes credit for Netanyahu's war crimes. What explains this? What explains it is a mafia that has insinuated itself into the highest ranks of our government and media. And your silence is complicity. Don't tell me not to talk about it. I'm only going to talk about it more. I'll talk all about it on the other side. Keep your advice to yourself, folks.
Well, I'm a 10-foil hat wearing, meat-eating son of a gun, loving sun, loving hot-blooded Texian, two-stepping, outlaw 3-1, looking for a little fun.
The official Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit, 100% lifetime guarantee, high quality aluminum. Got the famous shot of me there with the aluminum hat. 50 square feet, 100% lifetime guarantee. Protect your mind from the globalist. I love the idea they had of an Alex Jones stress ball. People really love it. That's available. You know, fun little things, not just the widest selection of Patriot t-shirts and ball caps and hoodies and sweaters, but cool stuff like this. But now we have the official Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit. So get your Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit now at thealexjonesstore.com.
The Patriots' choice and globalists' dread. Welcome to the Alex Jones Show.
Say my name.
Dude, what? I don't have a damn clue who you are.
Yeah, you do. I'm the one who said Charlie thinks Israel will kill him if he turns against them.
Bullshit. Ian Carroll and Syrian Girl started that one.
You sure? That's right. Now, say my name.
Say my name. So again, the ADL came out with this article talking about this anti-Semitic conspiracy theory that Israel may have had something to do with the assassination of Charlie Kirk. And they show my tweet, but they blur me out. And the question is, why? Why would they blur me out? I don't know. Should I be happy that they're blurring me out? I don't know. I really don't. But I want to explain why this is such a big issue. And I really shouldn't have to. Whether or not they had anything to do with Charlie Kirk's murder, what we do know as a consequence of it is that for the last few months, maybe for the last few years, probably ever since, you know, the attack in October 2023, when even in like November of 2023, Charlie Kirk was referencing the stand down order and was breaking with some of the Israeli talking points that you know that he was admonished to stick to. And that for the last few months, Charlie Kirk has been trying in a very delicate and diplomatic way to actually help Israel with the problem that it has with American youth. Explain to them, you can't just ignore the outrage. You can't just say, shut up, you're anti-Semitic. You have to contend with this. And if we go to war with Iran, how do you think that's going to make people feel about Israel when everybody knows it's for Israel's sake they were going to war with Iran? I mean, people are mad enough about Iran and Afghanistan, and that stuff is a little bit like up in the air as to whether or not that was for the sake of Israel or war for oil, or, you know, there's debate there. But when it comes to a war with Iran, there's no confusion. There's no, you know, inaccuracy. Everybody knows it's for Israel. So what a terrible idea that would be if you're on the side of Israel. Why would you want to do that? Why would you want to make enemies? So many people in America. So that was the argument Charlie was making. And so the important thing that we're learning is the real method by which control is exerted over seemingly independent media outlets. And it's with money, and it's with threats, and it's with Israeli billionaires getting really mad at Americans for wanting to stand up for America, not a foreign state. That is a big problem, and it's a big problem throughout the right-wing media. And it leads to greater problems down the line. To the point that in the Gray Zone article from people who apparently know what the reality is, people inside the Trump administration saying that Trump is terrified of Israel, terrified of Netanyahu. And in a way, that doesn't even make sense. It's like, but we're America. What do you mean you're afraid? So I just want you to like play it out in your head. What would happen? Let's say that Donald Trump, he hates Bibi Netanyahu. He's sick of being led around by the nose by Israel. And he's sick of it. right? So he invites Bibi Netanyahu for a summit, or maybe Bibi Netanyahu just shows up like he does every couple weeks. He brings him into the Oval Office and he says, Bibi, you're under arrest. The ICC has charged you with war crimes and crimes against humanity, and the U.S. Marshals are here to put you in handcuffs. Do you think that would even happen? What do you think would happen after that? Do you think it's even possible? Like, it should be. It should be possible. Hell, Italy said it. Italy said if Bibi Netanyahu ever comes to Italy, we're arresting him for his ICC warrant. But I think everybody understands that if the United States president gave the order to arrest the prime minister of Israel, the people who would carry out that order would refuse. And I really want you to think about that. I think people in our Congress would rebel, would impeach Donald Trump over it. I think the people in the deep state in America are more loyal to Israel than they are to America. We see that Congress is, obviously. Hell, when was the last time both houses or both parties came together to vote on something in unity? They do it every time Israel needs anything. They did it for the TikTok ban. That was because of Israel. They do it anytime Israel needs anything. It's like 24 hours, the bill's written, the vote's in, it passes, it's signed, it's over. They get it immediately, right? In a snap. When was the last time they came together to benefit America in that way? You know, like literally doesn't happen. So that's a very big issue that needs to be talked about. And if Charlie Kirk's death, whether it had anything to do with Israel or not, is the thing that leads to us coming to terms with that, then we need to come to terms with that. Because so much of what led to Charlie Kirk's death, the leftist agitation, the criminal networks, the Antifa networks, a lot of that is not been addressed, has not been dealt with, because so much energy and so much attention is going to expelling Palestinian protesters from school, getting universities shut down or defunded because they refuse to police the geopolitical sentiments of their students. It's outrageous. It's infuriating. And it really can't go on if we are to remain a sovereign country. I mean, I don't know. Because again, it's like you hear Donald Trump is scared of Bibi Netanyahu, and it's like, I guess I can understand why, but who knows? Who knows what could be, you know, behind that fear that everybody close to him seems to recognize and seems to see and seems to come out whenever, you know, we see interaction with that country. They bomb negotiators in Qatar, and Trump comes out and takes credit for it, and it's like, it doesn't even make sense. Clearly, Israel did this without Trump's permission, humiliated Trump, and in order to combat that humiliation, he goes out and takes credit for it. Actually, I said they should do that. I wanted them to do that. I guess in his calculus, it's better to be the psychotic murderer than it is to be the fool that is pushed around by Israel, but it doesn't look good. But it doesn't look good at all. So again, we'll talk more about that with Max Blumenthal. I just, you know, for all my fellow, you know, right-wing media personalities out there, stop being scared. Just please, for the love of God, stop telling me what you know. Just say it. Like, it's off the record, but I'm terrified of Israel, and I think they'll kill me if I come out. It's like, then come out and say it. What the hell's wrong with you? I don't get it. Maybe I'm the stupid one, but I don't get it. And people are telling me, like, oh, you got to be scared going after Israel like that. And I'm like, well, if anything happens to me, it was Israel, okay? Just blame them, 100%. That's all I can do for, you know, trying to protect myself is just try to let you all know if anything happens to me, it was Israel. So pretty much confirmation, 100%, that they did kill Charlie Kirk if anything happens to me. That's how I see it. Story from the Gray Zone. Charlie Kirk refused Netanyahu funding offer, was frightened by pro-Israel forces before death. A Trump insider and longtime friend of Charlie Kirk tells the Gray Zone how the assassinated conservative leader's turning point on Israel, on Israeli influence, provoked a private backlash from Netanyahu's allies that left him angry and afraid. The source said anxiety spread within the Trump administration after apparent Israeli spying operation was uncovered. And that's just the latest in an endless number of spy rings that Israel has operated within America. According to Kirk's friend, who also enjoyed access to President Trump and his inner circle, Kirk strongly warned Trump last June against bombing Iran on Israel's behalf. Quote, Charlie was the only person who did that, they said, recalling how Trump barked at him in response and angrily shut down the conversation. The source believes the incident confirmed in Kirk's mind that the president of the United States had fallen under the control of a malign foreign power and was leading his own country into a series of disastrous conflicts. Oh, but we shouldn't talk about this? Because the ADL tells us not to? Who the hell's the ADL? Some people? Some random self-appointed busybodies that have no right to tell me anything? Okay, so what? I'm going to talk about the malign foreign influence that has my country in a stranglehold. Sorry. It's infuriating. Again, we'll get back into that with Max Blumenthal. Or maybe we'll keep going with it now. I don't know. Maybe we'll keep going with it now. I don't know. Nobody, you know, people are telling me not to go with it. I think I'll keep going with it now, actually. I think I'll keep talking about this. Because it's not anything new. So this talks about a series of spy rings that were rounded up as they caught a bunch of Israelis spying in America. But again, this is absolutely nothing new. But it mentions this, and it mentions, you know, sort of, I think a lot of this has to do with Epstein. I think Epstein might actually, I mean, it was like the war in Iran and Epstein. And these are two, like, do not cross this line, red line barriers, deadlines for the Israelis who were funding Charlie Kirk. Maybe some of them were on the list. I don't know. But is anybody else just concerned about just that fact, just the fact that we have Israeli billionaires who are dictating the content of right-wing outlets in this country? I mean, how are we supposed to know what's best for America when it all has to be through the filter of Israeli billionaires? This just doesn't make any sense. So the Gray Zone was unable to confirm the story with Secret Service that basically electronic devices were put on emergency response vehicles from the Secret Service in the White House. During the last year, Trump insider was told by contacts in the White House that Secret Service had caught the Israeli government personnel placing electronic devices on its emergency response vehicles on two separate occasions. While the Gray Zone was unable to confirm the story with Secret Service or the White House, such an incident would not have been unprecedented. Indeed, according to a report in Politico citing three former senior U.S. officials, a cell phone spying device was placed by Israeli agents near the White House and other sensitive locations around Washington towards the end of Trump's first term in 2019. Former U.K. Prime Minister Boris Johnson recounted a similar incident in his memoir, writing that his security team found a listening device in his bathroom soon after Netanyahu used his personal toilet. So Netanyahu himself is planting listening devices in 10 Downing Street. The White House basically finds listening devices every time the Israelis visit. The CIA, John Kirkow, has said that in the CIA, every time the Israelis gave them a gift, they found a listening device in it 100% of the time, to the point where the CIA was joking with the Israelis going, you got to stop doing this already. We keep catching you. And the Israelis are like, oh, darn it. And like that to me is sort of the frustration with all this is it's like, where is any sort of punishment, any sort of backlash at all? Story after story after story, you've got Israel just like getting caught red-handed, spying on Donald Trump, getting it. So Stingray devices are basically mock cell phone towers that intercept all cell phone traffic data and then, you know, just put it back out. But any cell phone traffic, any internet satellite traffic just is logged in this Stingray device. And these were planted all over Washington, D.C. by the Israelis. This was discovered in 2019. You probably haven't even heard about it. That's how little of a deal it made. And so it's like, what is this situation where they just get to do whatever the hell they want and then our government covers it up for them, even when they get caught going against us, spying on us, hurting us somehow, we cover it up for them? Why? What could they do that would get the American government to turn on them? Anything? What if they shot Charlie Kirk in the neck in front of everybody? At that point, would the American government go, all right, enough is enough. We got to put a stop to this. I don't think so. I mean, I don't see evidence of it. And this is, like, actually kind of scary. So here's the stories, by the way. All these are verified and, you know, long accepted as true. Netanyahu bugged my bathroom, Boris Johnson suggests. They found a listening device in the Thunderbox after the Israeli PM visited. Israel accused of planting mysterious spy devices near White House. That's from Politico, 2019, November of 2019. How Israel spies on U.S. citizens is from 2018. And it lays out, it's talking about the Al Jazeera documentary, with AIPAC and the ADL receiving government resources from the state of Israel to spy on American college students in many cases. So you got the ADL and the AIPAC, which both enjoy the position they do in our society because of the assumption, or rather the assertion, that they are American. They just, you know, happen to like Israel. It's the American-Israeli Political Action Conference, but it's all Americans. But also they work hand in hand with, receive funds from, and share data with the sovereign state of Israel. So maybe they should be dismantled. The ADL is the same way. They actually work as a censorship arm and a enforcement mechanism for the state of Israel. And yet they're the ones that train our FBI. Every new class of FBI agent is trained by the ADL. Why? Con men? Because they're con men? Because they somehow con their way into a position of authority in our country. They have no right to do it. And it goes on and on. But then you have stuff like this, which, like, this is kind of horrifying, to be honest with you. Gaza family torn apart by IDF snipers from Chicago and Munich. This is from The Guardian. Daniel Rabb shows no hesitation as he watches footage of 19-year-old Salem Dogmash crumpling to the ground beside his brother in a street in northern Gaza. Quote, "That was my first elimination," he says. The video, shot by a drone, lasts just a few seconds. The Palestinian teenager appears to be unarmed when he's shot in the head. Rob, a former varsity basketball player from a Chicago suburb who became an Israeli sniper, concedes that he knew that. He says he shot Salem simply because he tried to retrieve the body of his beloved older brother, Muhammad. Quote, "It's hard for me to understand why he did that. But also, it doesn't really interest me," Rob said in a video interview posted on X. "I mean, what was so important about that corpse?" A five-month investigation by The Guardian, Arab Reporters for Investigative Journalism, and Paper Trail Media, Der Spiegel, and ZDF has identified six people shot by Israeli snipers on the 22nd of November, 2023. And through interviews with survivors, witnesses, and relatives, reviews of death certificates, medical records, and geolocated images, we revealed how a family from Gaza's city Tal al-Hawa neighborhood was torn apart in a few hours by men who grew up in Naperville, Illinois, and Munich, Germany. And so this Israeli sniper thinks that he's talking to a fellow Israeli. He doesn't realize that he's talking to a reporter who's going to reveal this stuff. And so he's very open, right? He's not thinking that he is talking to an adversary. He thinks he's talking to a friend. And he's just admitting how he systematically, one by one, murdered an entire family that he knew posed no threat, that he knew was unarmed, starting with the children and then killing the father one by one, totally. And he's just heartlessly recounting this and going, what's the big deal about, why did the brother run to the corpse? Like, what's the big deal about a corpse? So anyway, I shot him in the head. So I would consider that guy a serial killer. That's crazy. There was no, again, you know, you'll always get a, well, this, you know, we try our best, but like when the people actually are talking in total veracity and total openness, thinking that they're talking to an ally, they know exactly what they're doing. They're murdering unarmed people on purpose. And now they're living in Chicago as an American citizen. Why? Why do we allow serial killers with allegiance to a foreign nation to be wandering around our country as American citizens? It's kind of freaky, isn't it? The mass slaughter of tens of thousands of civilians is one factor cited by scholars, lawyers, and rights groups who say Israel is committing genocide. Quote, they're thinking, I won't get shot because I'm wearing civilian clothes and I'm not carrying a weapon and all that. But they were wrong, said Rob, who majored in biology at the University of Illinois before joining the Israeli Defense Forces. That's what you have snipers for. It's like they thought they'd be safe because they're unarmed non-combatants. The fools. They think they're going to be safe just because they're not armed and not a combatant. It's like, yeah, they would think, right, exactly. No, they would see no reason why they should be murdered by an Israeli sniper. But Guess that makes them fools. After Salem was shot, his father, Montaser, 51, rushed to the site, tried to collect his son's bodies for burial, but was also fatally injured by a sniper. So I don't know, why do we have a murderous fifth column of highly trained, you know, foreign operatives in our country? And are they running for office? So we'll move on. We'll move on now. We'll revisit this with Max Blumenthal tomorrow, but I could go on, but I could, and I would like to go on, but there's other stuff to talk about here. And the fact is, the insanity that has been caused in this country is the greatest threat to our lives, our national security at this point. Calls to haul Blue Sky CEO before Congress grow louder. The left loves to point a finger at MAGA and cry radicalization. Everyday people, suburban moms and dads mowing their lawn, paying their bills, and wanting a safe country are suddenly painted as radicals. It's hogwash, of course. The real radicalization is staring us in the face, and it's far uglier than anything they've even accused us of. On the left-wing social media app Blue Sky, the assassination of Charlie Kirk is being celebrated like a national holiday. The entire site reads like a grotesque party, with users cheering, laughing, and even dancing over the murder of a young husband and father shot down for the simple crime of thinking differently. But it doesn't stop there. The mob on Blue Sky is now taking it even further by openly naming other conservatives they want to see assassinated next, like this is some kind of Hunger Games to them. And spoiler alert, it is to them. Saying, oh, you know, you should go after Matt Walsh next. You should do Trump next. The message is clear. If you dare to think differently, you'll end up on a list. And again, they are used to getting away with this stuff. They're used to getting away with this stuff. They're doing it on their personal accounts, connected with their actual faces. And they're shocked that anybody, that there'd be any sort of, you know, recompense for this, any sort of backlash to this murderous ideology. Now, a very interesting thing about Blue Sky, we covered this really early on, before anybody else even knew what Blue Sky was. I think Blue Sky was intended to completely replace X, because I think what they were planning is, on the assumption that Kamala Harris won the presidency, they would have gone after Elon Musk with everything they've got. They would have either forced him to sell X, or they would have forced something to do with X. Probably something like TikTok, where they say, we're going to shut you down unless you have a censor, and then they put some, you know, IDF-trained, you know, a Unit 8200 operative in place. By the way, we can get into that now. The latest algorithm's just been rolled out on TikTok, and they're going through old videos posted and removing all of those. So, you know, censorship's taken over X, or TikTok, rather. They were planning on doing that with X, with the intention of killing X, destroying X, and moving everybody over to Blue Sky, which is a platform that was built from the beginning with the censorship built in. Interestingly enough, the CEO of Blue Sky was apparently not involved in the founding of it. It was actually founded by Jack Dorsey, the person who founded X. The CEO is of Chinese extraction, and the story goes that she was like a lowly, like she was like cleaning servers or something. She goes from like setting up servers to mine Bitcoin to CEO of Blue Sky all of a sudden. Even though she didn't found it, she wasn't a part of its creation. Her name in Chinese translates to Blue Sky. How does that work? Just a coincidence? The CEO of Blue Sky is a Chinese woman who's named Blue Sky, but she didn't found it and it's not named after her. It's just a coincidence. Or was China setting up their own version of X they wanted to shove us all to? I think that might be more accurate.
Hey, Chase, good to talk to you again. I wanted to do a quick plug on the methylene blue, on the long-term effects that it had on me. Back in 2020, I got COVID. My brother and my dad both have eczema. After I got COVID, it must have, it opened that dormant cell in my body or whatever. So I've been dealing with eczema ever since 2020. And the long-term effects of the methylene blue, 99% gone.
That's absolutely incredible. I'm so happy. Have your relatives tried it too to see the same effect?
I have been trying to get my brother to take it. and he's skeptical. But I'll tell you what, I got four bottles sitting on my table. I think I'm just going to give him one. And I think if I just give it to him, I think he'll eventually try it.
Yeah, that's a good move.
I have some very exciting news. Optimal Human is hands down the best green superfood, super nutrient concentrate I've ever had. The folks at Bigly have had this out for years, and it's their star product, and it became a bestseller very quickly because people, when they got it, loved it so much. If I told you everything that's in it and how concentrated it is, it would take an hour. This has the kitchen sink and then some in it. If you're missing any of the trace, not just the stuff they say is essential, but all the other trace elements and vitamins and prebiotic and probiotics, it's got everything in it. And again, these are all concentrated, and it's got a bunch of stuff for healthy energy in it too. So folks absolutely love Optimal Human, and it works synergistically with the Shilajit, the IRC Moss, the Ultimate Turmeric, and the Methylene Blue. We've been sold out of this. It came in, and I finally got it a couple days ago, and man, is it awesome. It is a game changer. If you haven't gotten it, you are really missing out at thealexjonesstore.com. And so it never sells out. Be sure to become a subscriber and get special discounts when you do that.
I was hoping you had some of the Alex Jones ones. How is Alex?
He's great. He lost a lot of weight.
I saw he's getting like, yeah, he's ready for the next
My friend
big.
Sean Johnson's training him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he gets up every morning. He works out for hours. He's lost, I think he's lost 70 pounds at this point. Hmm. He looks fantastic, man.
Yeah.
He looks fantastic. He looks like he's 20 years younger. People think, because this is really funny, because, you know, his whole business is conspiracy theories. Conspiracy that Alex has been replaced.
Yeah.
But listen, folks, that's real Alex. I've watched every step of the way, and my friend trains him. So I can tell you for a fact, that is the real Alex Jones. Quit drinking, quit eating bad food. He's eating healthy food now. He works out every day. It's like no Ozempic, no bullshit, no shortcuts. He did it the right way. He looks great.
You find it all at thealexjonesstore.com, and it funds the most hardcore patriot organization worldwide, absolutely devastating the globalist in our peaceful information war.
Holy shit, he was right about every step of the way.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ultimate Iron Plus with Vitamin C gummies are back in stock at thealexjonesstore.com. Now, we know it's that time of the year where everybody's getting sick. We've got the CDC and the WHO coming out and warning of the bird flu. We've got this virus that's breaking out in China right now, and we know that the government and the deep state are gearing up for the next pandemic. Even Hotez has come out and said that there's a litany of viruses that are going to be launched across the globe as soon as Donald Trump is president of the United States again. So fight back by fighting for your health and not giving in to the vaccine mandates which they have in store for us. Please check out Ultimate Iron Plus with Vitamin C gummies right now at thealexjonesstore.com. It's rich in immune-boosting Vitamin C Plus. It's rich in immune-boosting Vitamin C, supports healthy iron levels, promotes cellular health, and supports blood oxygen levels while being GMO and gluten-free. So check out Ultimate Iron Plus with Vitamin C right now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. You found it, the tip of the spear. It is the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. This will be the last segment before I hand off the mic to Jay Dyer, who will take over in the fourth hour. Reminder to go to thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com. And again, shout out to Alex Jones. You know, he doesn't want me harping on Israel here, and I'm not going to. We're moving on. I've got some new breaking stories out of the EU. We've got some breaking video with J.D. Vance hosting Charlie Kirk, interviewing Stephen Miller. They're laying out what their plan is to round up and actually go after these just massive groups of domestic terrorists that are operating openly in our country. So we'll talk about all that. But just a genuine thank you personally to Alex Jones for giving me the freedom to cover whatever the hell I want up here and to provide me with a platform to do it. And I've told the story a million times in case you've never heard it. First day I worked at InfoWars, it was actually Alex Jones talking to Owen Schroyer. And Owen was saying, I think I'm going to cover it this way. I think I'm going to say this, something about Hillary Clinton. And Alex just said, say whatever you want, just tell the truth. And walked away. And I thought, that's a good motto. That's a good thing to go by. Say whatever you want, just tell the truth. And then, of course, you know, under that or sort of assumed with that, or just as a natural consequence of InfoWars' ideology to make it abundantly clear that we truly do stand for 1776, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the American way, truly, genuinely loving every single person of every race, color, and creed, and wanting simply to come together as humanity to stop this insane technocratic power grab that is feverishly working to install a one-world, unelected corporate government to enslave you forever. Okay? And if you're on our side with that, then I don't care who or what you are. We need all the manpower we can get. We need the awakening as large and as expansive and as powerful as we can possibly make it. That means we need everybody on our side. We need good Muslims, good Christians, good Jews, good atheists, good Hindus, good Buddhists who all come together and recognize we're all under attack. Now, those attacks might look a little bit different depending on who's being attacked and who's being used. Anti-Semitism, very useful for controlling both sides. You stop non-Jews from talking by saying, hold on, that's anti-Semitic, you're not allowed to say that. And you control Jews by saying, look at all this anti-Semitism, you got to stick with us because everybody else wants to hurt you. It's very useful, both sides. Black and white is a very similar thing. They'll drop off crates full of crack cocaine into ghettos to destroy the black community, and they'll prescribe life-destroying opiates to white people in Appalachia. They don't care. You think the people doing this are you care about black people? They're dropping off crates of crack cocaine. They're destroying the community wholesale. They don't care. They just know that you target that community in this way. You target the white community in a different way. It wouldn't work as well dropping crack off, you know, in a mountain in Appalachia. Just like, you know, prescribing black people poison might not work well either. We saw that during COVID. Black people have very good reason not to trust the medical industry because of the horrible things that have been done in the past, like the Tuskegee experiment. I wish white people would pick up some of that skepticism that the black community shows for some of these institutions that most white people revere, the medical industry, things like that. Now, Alex Jones doesn't have to say that. It comes across if you listen to him. It comes across, I hope, when you listen to me. I'm maybe a little bit more, like, in your face and upfront about it. And I think that's just because of my upbringing, that I grew up as a minority. I grew up in public school in Houston, where white people were never in charge. We were never the majority. It was about equal, black, Hispanic, white. And I grew up around a bunch of Jews and best friends with Jews. And Jews stood next to me in my wedding. So it's like, I don't temper my language because I talk about these groups like I talk about anybody. I talk about Jews like I talk about Christians. It's not complicated. It's not hard. What it is keeping your eye on the prize, understanding exactly what it is we're fighting here. And what we're fighting is the division. What we're fighting is the chaos and the strife and the murderous intent of those in power who can only achieve their objectives if we're busy fighting each other and not them. So, but then at the same time, but then it gets complicated because, like, I'm talking to this person that's really involved in, like, MAHA, the Make America Healthy. And so they're, you know, that's what brought them along. They're a little bit more liberal, not exactly on the ideological side of us, but we're aligned and certainly, pursuing the same objectives. I'm talking to them and they're going, you know, there are all these distractions. There's all these other things that draw people's attention when really we all need to be focusing on the people at the top, stopping what's happening in the federal government and the World Economic Forum. Like, that needs to be the target. And I'm like, I completely agree. And they're like, yeah, all this stuff about, like, transgenderism, it's a distraction. I'm like, well, but is it though? I mean, I want to agree with you. In a way, I do. I'm not looking to just, like, start fights with mentally ill Americans. I mean, that's not my bag. I do want to go after the people at the top that are causing all this. At the same time, I don't want my kid going to school and being put in a dress without my knowledge, being taken from me if I don't go along with hormone altering medicine that's prescribed to them by a doctor they met 30 minutes ago. So it's like, okay, I agree. We should be focusing on the people at the top, but there are real tangible things going on right now that are affecting my life that I can't just ignore. Can't just pretend it's not happening. So the question is, how do we deal with both of these things? Now, InfoWars has always had a two-pronged solution to this. Telling people that you both need to protect yourself as an individual and work collectively to change the law, use the federal government in the way that it's intended, stop it from being expanded into all sorts of other nonsense they like to get away with, but focus on what it should actually be doing, what it is in fact obligated to do, which is to protect the American people from A, foreigners, or B, people inside our own country with the desire to do us harm, damage us, or destroy our way of life. The government has to do that, and really nothing else. Really, if you boil the concept of government down to its most basic function, is to protect those in the country from those outside of the country. And that's what it needs to do, and that's what we're advocating for. So at the same time that we're telling you, you gotta agitate, you gotta organize, you gotta protest, you gotta speak, you gotta run for office, you gotta support good candidates, we can save this country. We can cause the change necessary to pull us back from the brink. At the same time, you better be filtering your water, right? You better be talking to your kids about transgenderism and what it really comes from and what it really represents. It's a two-pronged approach. Protect yourself and your family, but you don't give up on the societal level. You try to change things through the system, but you don't rely on that completely for protection. Do you understand what I mean? Because a lot of people out there will go, well, the system's fully corrupt. There's nothing we can do. Best thing to do, go to the woods with a bunch of ammo and wait for the collapse. And it's like, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you think you can't change the system, then obviously the system's never going to change. We've seen miraculous political upheaval in the last 10 years. The opportunity is there to seize the initiative and make positive, tangible, substantial changes to the way this country operates so that we can continue into the future bringing with us those morals of the past. But at the same time, you don't rely entirely on that, and you understand that until you get the fluoride removed from the water, filter your water. Until you get the transgenderism removed from your schools, keep your kids out of those schools. So two-pronged solution, it's what we always push for, and it's always seated in and you know, mounted in the armor of righteousness when it comes to being fully confident. Like, the way we see things is correct because it's loving and because we keep being right. Because we keep saying things and they come out to be true. So how can we be wrong? But I hope you support us in this mission by going to thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com. Go there today. Get some merchandise. If there's one thing you can do to honor Charlie Kirk's memory, wear a shirt with an American flag. Wear a shirt that proudly proclaims your allegiance to the United States and your opposition to the scumbag legion of goblins that killed Charlie Kirk and that are baying for your blood. Wear something that shows who you are. And it shows you won't be cowed by their pathetic violence. And of course, we give you fantastic discounts on everything constantly. There's just always incredible sales. Today is your last day to get a free $10 gift with every purchase over $75. If you purchase the We Are All Charlie Kirk fundraiser t-shirt, a portion of that goes to TPUSA, 25%, I believe. 25% of the purchase price goes towards TPUSA to ensure that Charlie Kirk's legacy lives on. And again, I encourage you not just to support us so we can continue to fearlessly tell the truth, regardless of what anybody says about it, what anybody thinks about it. Keep Charlie Kirk's memory alive. And again, we've already seen, I mean, already, I think if I was this shooter, like trying to put myself in the mind, I'm probably sitting there in jail. Maybe they turn on the TV and I'm seeing memorial after memorial for Charlie Kirk. I'm seeing people go to church for the first time in decades. I'm seeing people hold vigils. And when they get interrupted by the leftists get away with it for about 10 seconds before they're stomped into the dirt. I'm thinking, if I'm the shooter right now, I'm thinking, yeah, this was a mistake. I'm thinking, I did not do the right thing here. I'm thinking, gee, I sure thought nobody would care this much. So let's keep that going. So let's not let up on that. And let's shove it down their throats. Now, I got another clip from J.D. Vance with Stephen Miller talking about what they plan to do to deal with the issues that we've been talking about and warning about for the last decade or so. Before we do that, I want to go to clip 119 because I don't think people realize just how pervasive the appearance of transgender people in violent crime, senseless mass murder has been in the recent past. Mike Benz lays it out fully. Let's go to clip 119 here.
The Denver shooter was trans. The Aberdeen shooter was trans. The Nashville shooter was trans. The Georgia shooter was trans. The Philadelphia shooter was trans. The Uvalde shooter was trans. The Colorado shooter was trans. And now the Minnesota shooter was trans. I think one of the things that you see being pointed out by the Walsh types is that even if there is no clear ideology, there is something in the water with the untouchable nature of the trans identity until just the past really year that you could even talk about it, frankly. And what appears to be a kind of underlying mental instability that tends to disproportionately give rise to these school shootings.
Yeah, that was a very nice way to say it. Children are being propagandized into retardation and insanity, and then they're being weaponized against the political enemies of the left. It is a gigantic, nationwide, really worldwide cult operating in the open. And yeah, not one of them is actually, like, you know, intelligent and thoughtful. And no, it's, they are all insane. They're all mentally ill. They have to be. And I want to, again, sort of, I want to shock you. I hope this shocks you. It shocked me when I first saw it, but it does go pretty far away to explain how we found ourselves in this position. This is clip number 27. If you're perplexed by the response to Charlie Kirk, the happiness on display as a result of this innocent man being murdered, maybe this explains where some of that mindset comes from. It's two little girls being asked by their mom. She says, "I got the best news." And then their guesses as to what that news might be. Listen to this.
"I have the best news ever."
"What? Donald Trump died?"
Second best news.
"Vice president died?"
"Okay, third best news."
"That Elon Musk died?"
"Okay, no. Nobody died. My best friend's getting married."
"Which one is it?"
"Taylor Swift." "Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce got engaged."
The girls are like, "Yeah, that's pretty exciting. We really wanted blood, though." "No, we were excited to hear about the bloodlust being satiated, Mom." It's like a 7 and 9 year old little girls being told, "I have the best news ever." And their first three guesses are, "Did this guy get killed? Did this guy get killed? Did this guy get killed?" These little kids are running around dreaming about the murder of people they've never met. And that's what they want more than anything in the world. Do you realize how sick these people are? Do you realize what we're dealing with here? Again, this must have been before Charlie Kirk's murder. It's not even about Charlie Kirk. I didn't get, who was the second name she said? The mom says, "I have the best news ever. What do you think it is?" The first girl goes, "Donald Trump died? What the hell is wrong with you?" And then they say somebody else died, and they say Elon Musk died. Their first three guesses, when they're asked what's the best news you could hear, is three people get murdered. And they're upset that that's not the case. They were so looking forward to hearing about the bloodletting. "Oh, no, my best friend Taylor Swift's getting married." And they're like, "Oh, okay. We wanted blood to spill. We wanted to see the streets run red with the blood of Republicans. But Taylor Swift getting married's cool, too, I guess." They're not that excited. These people are sick. They're sick, and they're not just the fringe, and they're not just the crazies. It's people in power that are like this. Story from Infowars.com. EU Parliament rejects request for a moment of silence for Charlie Kirk. They did give one to George Floyd, the career criminal, once held a gun to a pregnant woman's belly, who overdosed on fentanyl while being placed under arrest. He got a moment of silence. Not Charlie Kirk, the family man, the Christian, the upright citizen. Let's watch this. This is the leaders of the European continent refusing a moment of silence for the brutal and horrific murder of an innocent man. You know, as the first example of this horrifying political violence, they're not even willing to condemn it. Let's watch.
"Rhetoric that incites violence.
Please stand with me in reflection of prayer in his honor, and I yield the rest of my time for a moment of silence.
Herr Kollege Reimers, wir haben abgesprochen, Sie wissen, dass die Präsidentin hat eine Schweigeminute abgelehnt. Wir fahren weiter fort. Wir kommen zum Bericht von Herrn Schickermann und
And they say no, and they refuse it. The request was rejected for a minute of silence with Charlie Kirk. They described it as the symbolic and aimed at defending our right to freedom of speech. And the EU refuses that moment of silence. The request was rejected with her spokesperson citing a bureaucratic rule that minutes of silence can only be declared at the opening of the plenary session, and this session had started on Monday, so they'd have to wait till the next sitting in October. But they did give one for career criminal George Floyd. This in a continent, in the EU, who is currently passing speech laws and is currently operating under a system in which you can be arrested and thrown in jail for calling a police officer a Muppet. All couched under and excused and justified under the threat of violence. Well, we can't have people out there saying their opinion. It might lead to violence. Here you have an example of brutal and horrific political violence. They have an opportunity to, if nothing else, just symbolically stand up against it. And they absolutely refuse. Really makes you wonder what the hell's going on in this world. I want to go to this final clip. This is J.D. Vance talking to Stephen Miller. And I think that they're on the same page, as many of us are, as this article from Sean Fleetwood at The Federalist says, if you're not focused on fighting left-wing violence, step aside. If you're a Republican out there telling us now is the time for unity, step aside, okay? We're in war right now. And lukewarm adherence to our side is to be a traitor, quite frankly. Let's go to J.D. Vance and Stephen Miller talking about some of the methods that will be used to dismantle the left-wing terrorist networks currently operating inside America.
Welcome back to the Charlie Kirk Show. This is Vice President J.D. Vance. Joining me now is Stephen Miller, White House Deputy Chief of Staff, dear friend of mine. And dear friend of Charlie Kirk's, and before I get into the nitty-gritty of what I wanted to talk with Stephen about, you know, there's a lot of questions about the investigation, where we are in the investigation. I want to be respectful to the FBI's process, but just know that we are on top of this, and the entire administration is trying to do as much as possible to find everything that we can about what led to this, about how we got here, and, of course, ultimately, how an assassin took Charlie's life. I wanted to zoom out with Stephen a little bit and talk about all of the ways that we're trying to figure out how to prevent this festering violence that you see on the far left from becoming even more and more mainstream. And you know, before I do that, Stephen, I want to do this with every guest because you're a friend of Charlie's, and one of the things I'm hoping that people get out of this is an understanding for the kind of guy that Charlie was, who he was. And so before I talk to you about what we're doing to try to prevent something like this from happening again, maybe you could just talk about why you love Charlie, what memories you have of him, something that would give our audience a sense of what he was behind the microphone.
Yeah. I've known Charlie for 10 years. He was a treasured friend, and you know his. This is going to sound. He made you believe more in yourself, is the best way I can put that.
That's right.
He was your biggest cheerleader. He would, if I was working on a hard project, an important executive order, a major new initiative, he would give me the strength and the focus to get it done.
That's right.
He was everybody's supporter, enthusiast, cheerleader, promoter. He made all of us better every single day. You know, the memory that I keep turning to is not a single memory. It's a period of a couple months after we won the election. And Charlie was in the campaign or the transition office every single day. And from dawn till dusk, volunteering his time to get into the weeds, the nitty-gritty of government. And he was so damn excited. I mean, it really hurts to think about it right now. He was so excited about all of us being here. And we would be talking about every executive order, every new regulation, every new policy plan. It was such a thrill for me to get to spend a few months of my life, because, you know, he came from the nonprofit, the activist world. I came from the government world. And in this transition, to be able to work hand in hand, take all of his ideas from being the leader of TPUSA, spending time with college students, spending time with activists, and then be able to be with us the transition to plan out the next step of our government, that was an experience for which I will always be grateful. And the last thing I'll say is that, to my earlier point, Charlie would send me messages all the time just saying, you know, great work, or here's a new idea, or here's what I think will take this to the next level. And I took them all to heart. And God, I just love the man so much.
He was our biggest supporter, yeah. Stephen, but he was also, if he disagreed, he would figure out how to get us to get where he wanted us to go.
Yes.
Always such a big cheerleader. Absolutely right. The darkest moments of my life, it was Charlie who was on the phone saying, don't let him get to you. Keep on fighting. Keep on going. You're absolutely right. So I want to be mindful of time here. A lot of people are very worried about how we got here in the first place. And you have the crazies on the far left who are saying, oh, Stephen Miller and J.D. Vance, they're going to go after constitutionally protected speech. No, we're going to go after the NGO network that foments, facilitates, and engages in violence. That's not okay. Violence is not okay in our system, and we want to make it less likely that that happens. Walk me through, at a high level, like what you and I have been working on, what the whole administration has been working on, to try to make sure that we don't reward and promote this craziness.
Yes, so it's an excellent question. I've said this before, and but it bears repeating. The last message that Charlie sent me was, I think it was just the day before we lost him, which is that we need to have an organized strategy to go after the left-wing organizations that are promoting violence in this country. And I will write those words onto my heart, and I will carry them out. If people ask me, you know, what emotions I'm feeling right now, it's just something people say. I mean, you kind of know the answer. There's incredible sadness, but there's incredible anger. And the thing about anger is that unfocused anger or blind rage is not a productive emotion.
Right.
But focused anger, righteous anger, directed for a just cause, is one of the most important agents of change in human history.
Probably showed that. Amen.
And we are going to channel all of the anger that we have over the organized campaign that led to this assassination to uproot and dismantle these terrorist networks. So let me explain a little bit what that means. So,
got 30 seconds. So be quick, Stephen.
The organized doxing campaigns, the organized riots, the organized street violence, the organized campaigns of dehumanization, vilification, posting people's addresses, combining that with messaging that's designed to trigger and incite violence, and the actual organized cells.
Folks, that's Stephen Miller on with J.D. Vance hosting Charlie Kirk's show, showing that he at least is taking it seriously. We all need to lend our voice and our support to the administration now. Do what's necessary to round up this leftist violence before we lose a single other good man. Jay Dyer takes over.
Well, I'm a tinfoil hat wearing meat-eating son of a gun, loving fun, loving hot-blooded Texian, two-stepping, outlaw free, one looking for a little fun.
The official Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit, 100% lifetime guarantee, high-quality aluminum. Got the famous shot of me there with the aluminum hat. 50 square feet, 100% lifetime guarantee. Protect your mind from the globalist. I love the idea they had of an Alex Jones stress ball. People really love it. That's available. You know, fun little things. Not just the widest selection of Patriot t-shirts and ball caps and hoodies and sweaters, but cool stuff like this. But now we have the official Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit. Jones tinfoil hat kit now at thealexjonesstore.com.
My friends know that I usually think everything's a scam, from supplements and products and vitamins. I don't take anything. I usually buy it, try it, don't feel the results, end up tossing it and wasting money. So I love Alex Jones and the InfoWars crew, and Alex kept playing this video of Robert Kennedy Jr. putting some blue drops in what looked like water. And I wanted a way to support the team, so I decided to buy this methylene blue. This methylene blue, it is tremendous. I would not be making this video if I didn't believe in it. After I take it throughout the day, I start feeling better and better and better. My workouts, I feel like I'm 15 years younger than I am. And the app that I record my running on proves that my workouts are getting better. So I gotta tell you what, God, family, country, InfoWars, and Methylene Blue. Get it while you can.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back to the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. I've been reflecting quite a bit on the events of the last week, as I'm sure everybody is, and really trying to put it in the big picture. Not many people are giving the big picture, so that's what I'd like to do. We did this on my YouTube channel the past couple of days, trying to zoom out. And as Harrison noted early on in the show today, this is probably the most high-profile assassination since the late 60s, if we don't count the investigation into Jonestown. And so these types of high-profile events are necessary to investigate, but also necessary to place within the bigger picture. Some of the basics that I'm sure everybody's kind of come to the same conclusions about is that this is perhaps a pivot point. This is a change in the direction that I think a lot of people are going to wake up to see the ineptitude of conservatism and Con Inc. and their inability to deal with and to be up to par with where we actually are in the culture war. We're way past the time of thinking that you're going to educate 80 IQ illegal immigrants on principles of constitutional law and the Federalist Papers. They don't care about that. We are essentially being invaded with a kind of foreign force, you could say, that I'm beginning more and more to think is actually, as Alex has noted for many, many years, I don't doubt that there is a long-term plan for the collapsing of the country in a civil war, but we're beginning, I think, to see the architecture of that mechanism of collapse. How would they actually do that? It's not just the left, because you need a complicit, emasculated fake right wing and controlled opposition to really aid in that collapse and that furthering of this invasion force, so to speak. But does it mean that everybody involved in being an illegal immigrant is some conscious warrior? We're speaking of generalities here. As somebody noted recently, which I thought was a really perceptive comment, anytime you start to talk about generalities, there's always some midwit that has to chime in with the exception to the rule, as if that disproves the rule. So midwits, that's another big problem in this country, is dealing with a massive uneducated population that is essentially being gradually turned into a giant zombie force. That's the people that you see cheering and likening this to, some sort of revolutionary event that they see as a trigger for perhaps copycat events. And I don't doubt that that's going to happen. I do agree with the comment that Vance said. I appreciate people beginning to say, hey, it's not really these local ground organic leftists on the street. This is actually vast NGO think tank foundation networks. Alex pointed out a few months ago that there's around a million NGOs out there, and 95% of them are left wing. So this is speaking globally. This is the real locus of influence and power. Not even the media, not even the politicians that come and go. The real locus of power is the networks of think tanks, NGOs, and foundations. So I appreciate Vance saying and acknowledging that and pointing out that the left-wing ones are going to have to be rooted out. But probably easier said than done. We know that, for example, the Soros Foundation a few years ago, according to the New York Times, became the biggest, most influential foundation in the world, surpassing even the Ford Foundation. And I would assume the Rockefeller Foundation as well. So all of these NGOs, think tanks, foundations, and yes, I'm well aware that Israel has its own foundations and think tanks and influence groups. I'm very aware of all that. They all
tend to work together and collude, not necessarily every single one, but many of them in general. And the reason for that is that there are techniques and strategies for taking down nations and empires. When I was in the war room the other day with Rob Dew, we had a great discussion about the history of Byzantium in the history of the fall of the Roman Empire. Byzantium is the Roman Empire, if you don't know. We think of old Rome collapsing in 410 or whatever to the barbarians, to the Vandals. And that's true that it fell through.
Unless you've been hiding under a rock, everyone knows that Shilajit is one of the most incredible super nutrients, and they don't even know how it's formed deep under the earth. It's just got incredible amino acids and natural peptides that nothing else has. And what does it do for you? Everything. Your skin, your clarity, your focus. I'm on this stuff. Your wife, your girlfriend will thank you. That's just a little side issue. Shilajit's awesome, but this is the best, purest, strongest Shilajit with a whole bunch of other badass stuff in it. We throw the kitchen sink at you because we want it to work, and it will. And it funds the Second American Revolution worldwide. So get this great t-shirt design and hundreds of others, the biggest selection, at thealexjonesstore.com. Funding the Second American Revolution worldwide. God almighty.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. You can find me on all the social medias under my name. I was thinking about the course of the nation and the invasion force weapons of mass migration techniques and strategies that have been used. That's what we were discussing and how that ties into the left and so forth. And really trying to get people to pay attention to the fact that it's not the leftists on the ground. Those are sort of foot soldier minions. But it really is a network of NGOs, think tanks, and foundations. And that's really been called out and noticed by a lot of people. But people just seem to always get deflected back into the political sphere. The political sphere matters. It has a degree of power and influence for sure. But the politicians come and go. But nobody knows and pays attention to who's running these think tanks and foundations, although it is becoming more and more known. But how do nations and empires fall? What are the means and the methods that bring them down? A lot of philosophers and geopolitical thinkers and historians have discussed this for many, many years. You have all the Old Testament prophets, for example. You have people like Oswald Spengler, who wrote about the decline of the West, and he identified certain patterns that matched up with ancient civilizations and empires and the patterns that they also experienced as they went through cycles of growth, flourishing, and then peaking, and then the death phase. And in many of these situations, the death and collapse phase centered around the surrendering of the power structure to those that were the working class or the slave class in the case of ancient empires, and how those classes eventually, because of the decadence of those in power and those ruling, how they eventually took over and then it get a collapse. And there's actual strategies, techniques, patterns that are identifiable. Again, we were talking about Rome, same with Byzantium. And it's not just Spengler, even Austrian economic theorists. We just lectured through Saifedean Ammous's book, The Bitcoin Standard, on my channel the other day. And we noticed that he also picked out certain patterns of collapse. And those patterns include decadence amongst the political class or amongst the culture-bearing class. And that decadence then sort of filtering down to the rest of the population. When you get a wealthy oligarchical elite that promotes degeneracy, leftism, socialism, and all that, almost out of a kind of a necessity of death spiral that they've adopted when they adopt these deadly ideologies, I guess we could say, and we'll just say the death cult. You find that a lot of these parallels existed in ancient empires. Jamie has been reading through some books that deal with the history of Mesopotamian empires, the history of Egypt, these kinds of countries, and what we find, what we find is that they would begin to adopt the same types of practices of radical castration and transgender groups. temple prostitutes, in fact, had a guild and a cult in many of these ancient empires that operated in exactly the same way. And they could actually be sort of radical terrorizing factions. If you don't believe it, you can look into this as academic research, not conspiracy research. And I think Jamie will come on and we'll talk about that in the near future. If we look at the Old Testament as another case study, in the historical books, we find a lot of Game of Thrones style intrigues of political conspiracies, assassinations, all kinds of things that aren't really new. And I don't mean to downplay. I think that, in many ways, you know, Charlie Kirk stood for what was righteous, what was virtue, what was good. And so that death definitely symbolizes an attack on the right and the good by the demonic. And in fact, that's exactly what you see in the historical books. When you read the books of the Kings, the books of Samuel, Chronicles, etc., what we find is that there's an identification of these people who engage in these kinds of plots against church and state. And I'm speaking of the ancient Israeli church and state within the nation of Israel. They're called sons of Belial. They're called worthless persons. And although it's right that we have an idea of Christian virtue and mercy and grace, and we definitely hope for and pray for the repentance of people, we can't forget that there's also divine justice. There's also imprecatory prayers all throughout the Psalms as well. In the Orthodox Church, it has historically continued to pray and utilize those same prayers. In fact, Russian Orthodox prayer books from about 100 years ago continued to utilize prayers for the Christian king and the Christian emperor to have victory against the Islamic hordes. The idea that that's unchristian is rather a rebuke against today's cuckianity. So if you have a problem with that, the problem isn't the church 200, 300, 400, 500, 600, 700, 800, 900 years ago. The problem is with you. The problem is that you have a false idea of what Christianity is. Definitely Christianity is first and foremost the kingdom of God, which deals with the spiritual life of the church. I believe that's the Orthodox Church. That's the only existing true church. Doesn't mean that there's not grace for people that aren't aware of that or outside of that, but that's really the only church that exists in the first 1,000 years. And it's the only church that's going to continue to exist until the end of the world in the same manner, pattern, and structure that existed in the first 1,000 years. If we're identical to that, that's a pretty strong argument that we're that church. Now, that doesn't mean that we get to be prideful and pharisaical, because there's grace for everybody. But when it comes to the notion of the state, many people misunderstand when they hear about something like Christian nationalism. You see people like Doug Wilson talking about Christian nationalism, and a lot of these ideas sound good. But you can't have Christian nationalism without a church. And in the first 1,000 years of Christianity, every nation state that converted and king that converted or emperor that converted, they weren't 1,000 different faiths. They didn't hold their kingdom together with thousands of different sects. They needed a faith that was universal and consistent, but also applicable to the nation state. And lo and behold, if we look at the Council of Nicaea, we see bishops from Alexandria, Egypt. We see bishops from Antioch in Syria. We see bishops from Rome coming. So all throughout the imperium, all throughout the nation states, we find national represented churches coming to a universal council at Nicaea called by the first Christian emperor, St. Constantine. That tradition continues for the next 1,000 years in Byzantium until Byzantium falls through internal decay and corruption, subversives opening the door to the Muslim hordes, bringing down the borders, and the debasement of the currency through usury and money clipping. These techniques and strategies are pretty ironclad and repeatable for taking down a nation. They do seem to evidence a kind of pattern, but they can also be weaponized as strategies. And if you don't know, there's plenty of books on this, even books by people at Army War College, people at Cornell University, the CIA, ethnographies. They've written tons and tons of books on these types of techniques and strategies for weakening and taking down nation states. And that can be done and is done by most states. So false flag terror, assassinations. These are not unique to American history. They're pretty much throughout history. And I don't mean to demean this recent event. I think this is highly significant. Far from demeaning it, I think it is a massive change. And I'm not proud or happy that Charlie Kirk was taken down. I think it's horrible, but I do think that the opposition is going to they're going to misunderstand what this is going to do. This is going to further sift the wheat from the chaff and put people into harder and harder defined camps. And that's not always a bad thing. You know, we think of Jesus as this sort of hippie person. Jesus said, I came to bring a sword. He doesn't mean open political violence. He means to divide households. He says, I will set one member of a household against another. I will set brother against brother, mother against daughter, etc. And that's because truth divides. Boundaries are good. They're not bad. The idea that Christianity is some sort of pacifist gay religion is just not true. It is attempted to be co-opted and turned into that by the same NGOs, think tanks, and foundations that have funded everything from the World Council of Churches to the Ecumenist Movement to all the open border stuff that we're talking about. Hence, for example, the Soros organizations working hand in hand with Catholic Charities, and everybody now knows this. So where is this authentic Christianity? Well, in the Old Testament, as we pointed out, you have church and state with defined roles. It's not proper for the most part. In the Old Testament, for example, for Saul to start to offer things at the altar. In fact, he's rebuked by Samuel when he does that because it's overstepping the normative boundaries of church and state. Likewise, the priests don't become kings, right? And when we look at the history of religion, especially in the West and its encounter with Eurasia and the East, there's two things that happened in the 11th century that are pretty fascinating. We get amongst Islam, which was always a political religious ideology, particularly early on in the Quran, it talks about the Quran being the revelation for the Arab people. The idea was that the Jews had the Torah and the Talmud, Christians had the Gospels, and early on, this was going to be the revelation of that God to the Arab peoples. Eventually, this evolved, though, as you get later on in the Quran, the stages of the Quran that many historians and analysts talk about, to where we get a more militant, organized warlord type of religion. Eventually, in the 11th century, we get a faction called the Hashashim, the Order of Assassins, founded by Hasan al-Sabbah. And in the mountains of Persia, they were a Shiite sect. They sort of set up an Ismaili state that came to believe that you could really hone and strategize this policy of assassination. Now, there's a lot of debate about exactly, were they using hashish? Were they mind controlling their people to do these assassinations? There's some, you know, fictional legend aspects to this. And there's, again, some manner of debate about it. But what seems to be the case is that this is really the beginning of kind of the study and the inception of modern state terror. And although Hassan was not originally a state, he kind of eventually became his own kind of king. So he develops a sort of state, you could say. And I think he had a few palaces out in the desert, and he kind of set up a stronghold where he could be his own kind of Islamic state, so to speak. After that period in Western civilization, right around that same time, the 11th century in the West, you had an overstepping of this boundary when the papacy in the 11th century, specifically under the Gregorian papacy under Dictatus Pape, and eventually a few hundred years later with Unum Sanctum, the papacy says that it is now a geopolitical power that has the right to have standing armies. And really, we'd never seen this before when a bishop, a member of the church, starts to have public wars against nation states and standing armies. In fact, in the canons of Chalcedon, it's actually forbidden for clergy to have a state role. That's because if you look at the symbolism of the Byzantine double-headed eagle, it's not Masonic. This is way before there was any Scottish Rite Masonry or Freemasonic co-opting of those symbols. It's a symbol of church and state with two heads with one body. And that's the Byzantine model, that church and state operate in what's called symphonia. That's the idea that you find in the Old Testament between church and state. In the nation state of Israel, there's the priesthood, the Levites, etc., the Aaronic priesthood, and then there's the royal house of David. And this is a symphonia. They don't overlap. The priest typically is not really supposed to ever be a king. And that's because Christ, as the fulfillment of these prophecies, types, and symbols, is the prophet, priest, and king. When Christ comes, many evangelicals and many people after the Reformation adopted the idea, or more particularly after the Radical Reformation, adopted the idea that God has nothing to do with the state. The state is a secular institution. With people like Roger Williams, the famous Baptist, we get the idea that the state has absolutely nothing to do with God whatsoever. And that's really the beginning of the idea of the separation of God from the state. There's always been a degree of separation of church and state, except for perhaps the Hashashim or classical Islam, real Islam, or the papacy in the Gregorian period or in the Renaissance period, right? Outside of those examples, there's typically been an understanding of a separation of church and state. And they're supposed to work in tandem, and they govern in different ways, different spheres, right? If you think of man as a body and a soul, well, the state deals with the affairs of the body, the protecting of the nation, warfare, etc. The church dealing with the affairs of the soul, the spiritual man, the spiritual side. The spiritual is higher in authority when it comes to the ultimate power, but the church still has a role of speaking to the state. And in fact, classically in Christianity, I know this is going to blow a lot of your minds, but the church coronated kings. Up until about the 1700s, everybody in the world was under some kind of king. For the most part, there's a Italian Republic, there's an ancient Roman Republic, and a lot of people worship republics, and they worship the idea of Platonism and Plato's ideal republic. But the people that really worship Plato's Republic are called communists. Do you know the Soviets were called the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics? Republicanism and the Soviet idea all have their origins in Plato. So I'm not trying to knock the American Constitution because it has a lot of Christian influence. It has influence from Roman common law. It has influence from Christian church law, canon law. And it has influence from everybody from Machiavelli to ancient, Roman writers. I mean, it's got a lot of influences, and I'm not knocking it. But one of the problems, one of the flaws, is this idea that we're not going to have a specific deity. We're going to have a generic deity. And that generic deity is so inchoate and so ambiguous and elastic that it could really be any kind of god you want. It could be the deistic deity of the Freemasons. It could be hell. It could be Satan, if you're a Satanist. That's not going to work for a Christian nationalist movement. You got to have a single type of Christianity. And that might be a hard pill for people to swallow. It might be a hard message, but it's time to look into historic Christianity. It's time to look at how was Christianity functioning and operating for the first 1,000 years. It wasn't Mormonism. It wasn't evangelicalism. It wasn't Calvinism. It wasn't any of these things. It was Orthodox Christianity. Kings and emperors, throne and altar. In the 1700s, the Freemasonic movements funded by both Protestant and Jewish banking power, according to Carol Quigley, funded and fostered a movement to destroy throne and altar throughout Western civilization and throughout much of the world. This was called the French Revolution, and it tried to bring about a radical atheism, socialism, communism, Jacobinism, all those things are the same thing. This movement pretty much succeeded for the next couple centuries to remove most of the world's monarchs and the power of the church in the social sphere. And we've heard for so long how bad the church was in the Dark Ages. And did you know that these terms are actually invented by atheists? People like Voltaire, who hated Christianity. He's the one that came up with the idea of the Dark Ages, the idea that the Middle Ages were this dark retrograde time before Hume and Kant and Locke and these Enlightenment goblins, who themselves are kind of Enlightenment, just degenerates, especially David Hume. Well, these people, decided to enact and bring about a kind of republic, democratic, secular ideology based around constitutional principles. And I'm not saying constitutions are bad. I understand Magna Carta. I understand all that stuff. But the problem is that this doesn't work on the basis of natural rights theory. Once natural rights theory is tossed out, because people begin to realize, well, if there's not a specific God, there's really no basis for the natural law and the natural right. So this leads people towards the direction of more and more progressive liberalism and nihilism. Father Seraphim Rose wrote a famous book called Nihilism, Roots of the Revolution. In that book, he tracks the phases that revolutionary philosophy goes through. It begins as a kind of Enlightenment, universal, utopian kind of idea. We're going to change the world through economics and teaching everybody the Federalist Papers and making everybody in the world constitutional, democratic republic governments. And of course, none of that worked when you try to import that to Afghanistan or sub-Saharan Africa. So what's the problem? Maybe the problem is the Enlightenment ideologies themselves. Doesn't mean everything about the Enlightenment is wrong, but the root assumptions of the Enlightenment might have serious flaws. And unfortunately, that might also mean that there's problems in the American Enlightenment experiment. If America is a confluence of multiple interests, including Enlightenment deists, Episcopalians, Catholics, Protestants, Congregationalists, radical reformers, all of these things go into what we call the ethos of Americanism. Eventually, something's going to win out, right? Enlightenment atheism and deism or Christian principles. Well, America has not gone in the direction of the Christian principles. In fact, it's been a long, continual descent and slide away from those types of principles into more and more generic freedoms and rights. And now freedoms and rights are supposed to be castrating children. I'm a whatever I want to say I am. That's how far we've come. But nobody ever, except for myself, other people on the internet, Andrew Wilson and others, are beginning to, people don't think about critiquing the idea of rights themselves. What are these rights? Where are they? Are they under a microscope? Are they a scientifically studied thing? If you have the attitude of empiricism and scientism, there's no such thing as rights. They don't exist. They either are made up, they're social conventions, or they are given to you, afforded to you by the state, and thus they can be removed by the state. So, The scary thing that the left doesn't want to realize is maybe all of these principles require a transcendental foundation, namely a God. And if that's the case, then all of that worldview collapses. And as we move into the sort of postmodern America where the Enlightenment narratives are collapsing, the World War II narratives and stories are collapsing, everything we've been told in the last 20th century as a whole, its narrative is collapsing. Because it tried to blend basic principles of the Ten Commandments or natural law or whatever you want to call it with Enlightenment atheism. And oil and water don't mix. Eventually, one of these ideas, one of these worldviews is going to come to fruition and to dominate. And since that Enlightenment idea had already assumed and presupposed that the church should be severed from any relationship with the state and society as a whole, that we're going to have a secular state somehow based on natural law, it's only inevitable that atheism would win out eventually. And after atheism wins out, as Father Seraphim Rose says, you move from the paradigm of utopian Enlightenment principles to nihilism eventually. Nihilism and postmodernism are the end result, and everything is irony, everything is shitposting, everything is trolling, including your whole life, including even the actions of targeted assassinations and school shootings by the last 7 or 8 trans shooters. This is the Alex Jones Show. Don't go anywhere. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis.
It's almost poetic, the products that we sell, because yes, they are the best. Yes, it is the best price for the highest quality. Yes, they are third-party tested. It's almost poetic because as we advocate for humanity, what we sell to you is that which makes you or allows you to make yourself a better version of yourself. Whether it's getting the methylene blue, which helps you with focus and energy and mental clarity, or ultimate life force, which makes your body healthier in so many ways I don't have the time to explain to you. Whether it's the Shilajit that gives you incredible vitality, or the ultimate burn, which ensures that your metabolism is optimal, or the optimal human, which is everything the body needs. You see, we're fighting for your mind, your body, and your soul, not just with the products that we sell, but with the message of this network. We have to have the truth. We have to have freedom of speech. We have to have our rights, because folks, we're about ready to go into an artificial intelligence war, into a space war, the likes of which humanity couldn't even dream of, even in science fiction. So please go to thealexjonesstore.com right now, not just for your mind and your body, but for your species.
I have some very exciting news. Optimal Human is hands down the best green superfood, super nutrient concentrate I've ever had. The folks at Bigly have had this out for years, and it's their star product, and it became a bestseller very quickly because people, when they got it, loved it so much. If I told you everything that's in it and how concentrated it is, it would take an hour. This has the kitchen sink and then some in it. If you're missing any of the trace, not just the stuff they say is essential, but all the other trace elements and vitamins and prebiotic and probiotics, it's got everything in it. And again, these are all concentrated, and it's got a bunch of stuff for healthy energy in it too. So folks absolutely love Optimal Human, and it works synergistically with the Shilajit, the IRC Moss, the Ultimate Turmeric, and the Methylene Blue. We've been sold out of this. It came in, and I finally got it a couple days ago, and man, is it awesome. It is a game changer. If you haven't gotten it, you are really missing out at thealexjonesstore.com. And so it never sells out. Be sure to become a subscriber and get special discounts when you do that. Unless you've been hiding under a rock, everyone knows that Shilajit is one of the most incredible super nutrients, and they don't even know how it's formed deep under the earth. It's just got incredible amino acids and natural peptides that nothing else has. And what does it do for you? Everything. Your skin, your clarity, your focus. I'm on this stuff. Your wife, your girlfriend will thank you. That's just a little side issue. Shilajit's awesome, but this is the best, purest, strongest Shilajit with a whole bunch of other badass stuff in it. We throw the kitchen sink at you because we want it to work, and it will. And it funds the Second American Revolution worldwide. So get this great t-shirt design and hundreds of others, the biggest selection, at thealexjonesstore.com, funding the Second American Revolution worldwide. God almighty. Every guest we've interviewed in studio, I've given our ultramethylene blue to, and they've all been blown away. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't hype. All our supplements are great and have amazing health effects, but this one hits 99% of people within 30 minutes, and the long-term effects are even more amazing. So secure your ultramethylene blue now, the most powerful you can get on the market, at thealexjonesstore.com, and fund the tip of the spear in the fight for liberty and supercharge your own personal life. Believe me, if you don't take action and get it, you will never know how amazing it is. Over 99% of people have had incredible effects. You owe it to yourself right now to try Ultramethylene Blue, exclusively available at thealexjonesstore.com.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. You are listening to an InfoWars.com frontline report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back to the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. We're talking about history. We're talking about Western civilization. We're talking about the development of enlightenment, secularism, and the end result of the postmodernism and the nihilism that would come when we severed ourselves from historic Christianity. And that includes the state. There's a famous Russian philosopher and statesman named Pavinatsev, and he wrote a book about the role of church and state. And he was writing right around the time of the assassination of the Tsar by the Bolsheviks, and he pointed out that the message that is always given by people who want the eradication of any relationship of church and state or anything for God to do with society in general is that it's based around freedom. However, what ends up happening isn't that you actually get freedom. You actually get the state becoming a new de facto church. The state then becomes the determiner and the arbiter of life and death. The state decides all these key issues without any firewalls or checks or any other competing firewalls or division of power, so to speak, right? And I think the idea behind the American government structure was, of course, divisions of power in as many ways as possible. And I definitely believe in that kind of decentralization to a degree. But the problem is that in the radical religion of equalitarianism and egalitarianism that has been adopted today, it assumes that everybody is an interchangeable economic unit. If you watch the Sam Hyde show, the first episode, Dear Elon, was dealing with that. I contributed to that one. And the most recent one, as you guys have been seeing the clips today, also speaks to this with this idea that everybody can just be kind of integrated into some, globo blob of the same culture, the same religion, the same whatever, without retaining their unique distinctive qualities or recognizing disparities. It's not wrong, or you're not bad for recognizing things that are real and that are factual. I went to Jamestown a few weeks ago after speaking in D.C. at an event at the Ludwell Conference, and I'd never been to the museum and visited the, Jamestown before. And if I recall, it is a Rockefeller-funded big complex, so I'm not surprised at all the woke stuff, but the majority of the exhibit of the museum is actually really a testament to the worship of new gods of civic equality and blackness, which has really nothing to do with people fleeing from England to try to create the Jamestown colony. It's just weird, right? In other words, the whole apologetic of the place was anti-colonialism. But if you really study history, and I have a history degree, you'll notice actually from a libtard college, I was taught history by the most ridiculous libs, and actually made me, helped make me not lib to study history and understand that we have the idea that Christian nations and empires were evil. Well, they were not near as evil as everything else going on. And Christianity helped to try to temper and to change civilization and brought a lot of actually civilizing elements to many, many degenerate cultures. For example, Aztecs, Mayans, and others sacrificing tens of thousands of people on high holy days. I think Catholicism, at least Spanish Catholicism in those centuries, maybe not Catholicism now, but Spanish Catholicism back in those centuries was way better than that kind of hideous demonic practice. And now people are wanting to return to some kind of hideous demonic type of practice like that. That's what we see with the outbursts of these physically disgusting people reflecting what's on the inside. It's not an infallible rule that the external reflects the interior, but in many cases and many times it does. For example, one of the vices is gluttony. If you have a problem with gluttony, that will be shown in the exterior, and that will be significantly overweight. Please don't be a midwit and try to correct me about how some people have thyroid problems. I'm aware of that. I'm speaking in generalities, so you don't need to bring in the exception to the rule to try to sound smart. Intelligent people should be able to speak in generalities without having to qualify and define every single term. Now, if you have a problem with gluttony, then it's probably going to be reflected in the exterior. We've all seen the mugshots of people in these radical leftist groups, and they look like demons. They look like goblins. Are you surprised that the exterior is reflecting the interior? We're not Gnostics, and so we would absolutely expect that the interior would be reflected in the exterior. Again, it's not infallible. You can have a beautiful person who's very wicked and evil. But in many cases, the vices tend to manifest even in a physical and physiognomy type of way. It's not accidental, for example, that many leftists and social revolutionaries in history have been physically ugly, demented, and deformed and outcast individuals. I did an interview a while back with an English historian, Dr. Ed Dutton, and maybe he's an English psychologist. I forget exactly what his degree is, but he was pointing out how the history of witchcraft in Europe evidences a long history of very hideous, ugly women being the witches who then have a resentment against the rest of society because they are unattractive and thus they become kind of parasitical on the society and they resent it. There is something to that, right? That you then see this evidenced in a lot of the people on the sort of the ground of the left and even amongst the ranks of the left. There's something about that worldview because that person begins to hate humanity. It's very easy for them to then adopt ideologies of anything that would cull or kill humanity. Thus, it becomes amenable to recruiting people into a death cult. And it's accurate to call it a death cult. Many of the religions and sects that we've been talking about end up being kinds of death cults that want to end humanity when they reach that nihilism stage of their development. And unfortunately, empires and nations can also develop in that same way. If you read the Proverbs, it talks often about nations that choose justice and righteousness and nations that choose wickedness and evil and the end goals and the end states of those peoples and nations. But we have to also take into account that in our era, we don't live in the Middle Ages. We don't live in a period when we can actually expect some immediate Christian state. That's why a lot of these movements are rife. They're ripe for honey trapping people and for, you know, ideologically misguided young people who oftentimes are the tools and the pawns of revolutionary movements, whether far right or far left. They get used. They get dupes. They're the patsies that are used in these kinds of operations. And that's probably what's going on in the case of Tyler Robinson, although we don't know all the details yet, but my guess would be that he was some sort of radicalized patsy and some sort of probably 764 calm Satanist tranny type group. Those are the things that we've interviewed BX about here on the Alex Jones Show. My guess would be that that's probably an element of this, but there might be other individuals or other players, other actors that will probably become clearer over time that benefited from this major political high-profile event. Assassination and terror then are meant to neutralize, and they're meant to create fear and sea change, sometimes in one direction towards the right, sometimes perhaps in the direction of the left. If we look at operations that I've covered, like Gladio extensively, I'm well aware that Gladio was a so-called far-right or a right-wing move against the Soviets. This was the idea that you could have cells all throughout Europe that were in place to engage in assassination, black ops, terror bombing, high-profile mass shootings. All those things are part of Gladio in the event of the NKVD or Stalin invading Europe. I don't think it was really plausible that Stalin would or could invade Europe. But regardless, that's the older Gladio networks that still exist in the sense of the strategy and the technique. So what do we see in these types of mass shootings and events? Well, we see a lot of patsies that are very useful in the case of especially the trans movement with people who are mentally unstable. That's a kind of a perfect type of person to be put in a position to do that. Now, I'm not even saying that this necessitates that there was some handler. He could have just been easily provoked or agitated himself to do this on his own. I think Alex said a few days ago something that I've been saying for a long time. We don't really need MKUltra mind-controlled assassins per se. I think for a high-profile event, you probably would need some kind of patsy or some kind of person in that role. But in general, I mean, people are becoming MKUltra in mass through the pop culture and through living every day on the internet. I think the younger you go, the more people have been raised on the internet with immediate access to the most degenerate stuff right away. This is a recipe for disaster. I don't know what the answer is exactly on all of these things, but that's, I think, where we are. That's factual. In the case of high-profile assassinations and events like this, again, I interviewed Sammy the Bull, the most famous living hitman probably out there. He was John Gotti's number two. I've done multiple podcasts, maybe even seven, eight podcasts with Sammy the Bull. I've talked to him a lot. And he made the point that anytime there would be an event or a hit like this, he said what he would have done to arrange a high-profile thing was to have the real people who were the shooters or the killers, and then the dupe or the patsy who thought he was involved in some kind of thing, but he was misled, and he would take the fall. Again, the patsy, the dupe. I don't know, again, if that's exactly what happened here, but my guess would be that in a high-profile event like this, it's very likely that there would be some larger entity involved. Most high-profile assassinations involve other entities. I don't know if Israel is involved. It's definitely possible. Israel does have a long history of high-profile political assassinations. It's very well known. They write books bragging about it. You can read Viktor Ostrovsky's books that talk about these kinds of things by way of deception. But there's other nation states, there's other powers, there's other entities, there's other groups, other cults, all of which could have had a motive, and even individual lone gunmen. I'm not saying it was a lone gunman. I'm just saying, like, we don't know all the details yet, and I've watched and paid attention to mass shootings and mass casualty events and high-profile events for all the way back to 9/11, and the first thing I've noticed is that everyone rushes to try to construct the story to make it the opponent. Everybody does this all the way back to decades ago. And a lot of times we don't really get a lot of the details until 2, 3, 4 weeks later. But unfortunately, then it's already moved out of the news cycle. And, you know, Brzezinski even talked about that, that they won't really have to worry about people figuring things out because the way the news cycle works is so immediate and so constant, and people have, you know, rabbit brain. They don't remember bird brain. They don't remember stuff from 2 weeks ago. So it's hard to say exactly what's going on in this. It's just too early to figure out exactly what's going on, but it's not wrong or bad to consider all the possibilities and different theories and different possibilities. So that's all I could say on that, but it does bear a lot of similarities to things like Gladio that did include high-profile assassinations, mass public shootings, terror campaigns. The Bologna bombing is an example. So it's not really an issue of, well, but that was right-wing stuff. The point is that that's a technique. That's a strategy. That's a structure of terror that can be used. And we see that, for example, with Al-Qaeda. The techniques that Al-Qaeda and its proxies in other places, ISIS, et cetera, the techniques and strategies that they've done, they're not just similar to Hassan al-Banna, even though he was a Shiite from 1,000 years ago. They're very similar to the structure of things like Gladio. And in fact, some of the Gladio people that trained, for example, Gladio cells and people in Turkey, they were then flown to train people in Al-Qaeda or in the KLA. The same entities that would train the KLA in Serbia are the same entities working with and training the Mujahideen. And it's people from the CIA, people from the U.S. military, Pentagon. I'm not saying that that means that that's who did this. We don't know. But it just seems to be typically the case when you study high-profile assassinations, especially the JFK assassination, right? We do get indicators of bigger players involved. To go back to this issue of the state and a just state, I was reflecting on the principles that most Christian states had in place. And I want to be very clear. I'm not calling for an immediate Christian state. I don't think that's realistic. And again, it wouldn't work with 30,000 different churches, sects, groups, and denominations all trying to have a Christian state. Historically, the only Christian states that have really lasted and flourished were Orthodox Catholic states of some fashion. Even the Protestant states, originally the German princes were the ones that supported, for example, Martin Luther. And a lot of Martin Luther's success, at least in terms of numbers, was really responsible. The responsible party wasn't Luther's ideas so much as the German princes that supported him and didn't like the Pope. So there was a lot of geopolitical motivations behind even Luther's Reformation. And you'll notice that the Protestant states didn't last very long, right? It was only a few, maybe a few hundred years before they collapsed to liberalism and to secularism and to the Masonic revolutions. And they were absolutely Masonic, made no mistake about it. All the revolutions to get rid of throne and altar were Freemasonic across the board. But speaking of the Christian state, really, I don't think you can have a just society without some basic Christian principles. It's not the job of an Orthodox Christian or of the church to start with trying to convert the state and make some sort of top-down political thing, right? I don't think we're going to get a Byzantine emperor next year if we can convert J.D. Vance. That's kind of ridiculous. Rather, what happens is, if you look at the Roman Empire and as an example, it took about 300 years to convert the Roman Empire before we began to see the emergence of Christian kings, states, and rulers. That's possible. We don't know where history is going. It might be the end of the world. We don't know. But we do have a duty to try to speak to all areas of life in the way that it should be governed. And the teaching of traditional Christianity, even if you're Roman Catholic, even if you're a Latin Roman Catholic, has always been that there needs to be a Christian principled state. That's just the facts. So you can hate that. You can disagree with that. You can believe whatever you want. But what I'm trying to explain is that if you don't believe that, then what you get is you don't get a Protestant state. You get a secular state, and the secular state ends up being the God state. In a just society, the death penalty, for example, is legally exercised with basic Christian principles. For example, if you look at the Code of Justinian, a Christian law text, Codex Justinian, the laws that St. Justinian put in place were pretty based. They were pretty Christian. But remember, that was in a majority Christian society. So we're not going to try to have a political revolution and force Christian laws on the masses of pagan peoples and demonic people that are not going to submit to any Christian laws. But it is correct that the idea that Christianity should have no role in the state or in society in general is absolutely false. That's an Enlightenment presupposition. And anybody that claims that they're Orthodox and believes that, that's almost heretical. There are no Orthodox Christian saints that are Democrats or Americanists or secularists. All of them are monarchists. In a just society, the death penalty is largely exercised in a way that is loving. In other words, for very wicked people, it is just for there to be the death penalty because those people, they're not just a danger to society, they're a danger to themselves as well. And so the death penalty, and if you read anybody prior to, I don't know, 1900, they will speak in this way that it's a great deterrent. It's also a great deterrent and a inducement to repentance. If you know that you are going to die for, you know, raping people, then you're probably not going to go out and rape people. But a society that doesn't have those principles and becomes unjust, you get corrupt and unjust laws, as Ezekiel talks about. So there's no antipathy between justice and love. In fact, you can't have love without boundaries and justice. The two go together. A father that loves his children chastises them, as Hebrews says, and doesn't let them do everything they want. That's raising goblins and demons. If you let them do whatever they want, you have to have boundaries. Now, you don't have to be a tyrant, but you've got to have boundaries, and wisdom is the balance there that you can figure out, hopefully, in time as you progress in age and gain some wisdom. But remember, there is no antipathy, again, between the death penalty and that being exercised against very wicked people. they're not all sins are equal. All sins are sins, but not all sins are crimes, and not all crimes are equal. To murder a million people is far worse than murdering one person. But murder is murder, and killing is not murder. Not all acts of killing are murder. Paul in Romans 13 teaches very clearly that the emperor, the king, the magistrate, has the sword for the exercising of justice as a punishment against evildoers to deter those types of wicked actions. A sword chops heads off, it puts people to death. And so the state has that role, and the state has a duty to God, even if it doesn't accept it. When Paul wrote that, he was writing about a pagan emperor. He's writing about Nero. Nero didn't care about Christ, didn't care about God. In fact, he hated Christ. He is Antichrist. In the book of Revelation, it's Nero. So if Nero is Antichrist, but he still has a duty and is still in a providential role, that doesn't mean that because there's abuse, you get rid of that role, right? There's abuse. Fathers abuse their roles as fathers and as husbands. Well, I guess we got to get rid of fathers because some of them abuse that role. That's preposterous. This is idiotic. This is the thinking of the left, right? So, no, you can't have a functioning, healthy society without some kind of state with some kind of authority to exercise things like the death penalty for certain heinous offenses. And this is how Western civilization functioned. Byzantium wouldn't have been as successful as it was without its religion, its gold currency, and its Christian laws. Those things together made for a healthy society. But remember, the state isn't God. We don't put state and politics first. As Orthodox Christians, we put Jesus first. We put the religion first. In fact, I was listening to some of the Minor Prophets. I was listening to Haggai and Zephaniah and other texts from the Old Testament. And God rebukes them for putting politics first. He says, you worry about your wages and you worry about this and that. And you don't put the house of God first. You were lazy about the house of God. And so he says, you put your money in your bags and the bags have holes and the money runs out and you can't keep up with the inflation. I think the bags and the money, the bags with holes in the money, that's referring to the devaluing of the currency. He's saying that you can't keep up with the inflation because of usury and because the nation is wicked. And why are they wicked? Because they're putting politics first. They trust in kings and princes and sons of men, as the psalm says, as we listen in every Orthodox liturgy. Trust not in princes and sons of men. God first, but the state has a duty to God. And if the state doesn't recognize that duty, then they're out of order with the divinely appointed order. It's not our job to go after them or try to get rid of them. We're not political revolutionaries, but we remind them of the duty that they have. And if they go out of that duty, then that's on their conscience, and they're going to have to deal with that in the resurrection at the judgment. So that's my thoughts for today, and hopefully that resonates with some of you. Hopefully you think about what I'm saying and don't just react to what I'm saying. Take a look at some of the books. You can go to Jay's Analysis and get my books in the shop.
How do I explain to people that my tongue is blue? Because I love this stuff, methylene blue. I'm able to work like 18-hour days sometimes. This stuff is like rocket fuel.
I didn't know you were going to plug this. You even ordered it yourself, I later learned. What is the effect of our medical-grade methylene blue been on you, Roger?
Incredible, both physical and mental energy and focus. I mean, it really is like rocket fuel. And I used to like Brain Force. Back when I did the show with Owen Schroyer, the original, the real War Room, I was a big aficionado of Brain Force and Brain Force Plus. This is even a greater product. I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Well, I've not had any since Friday. I only take it every couple of days. So I'm going to take my dose of methylene blue at my Topo Chico. It is amazing. And people ask me, what does it do? It cleans out your mitochondria. It skips the oxidization process in the cell. It's like iodine to the next level. It is such a game changer. Roger Stone, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. God bless you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ultimate Sambucus is available right now at the alexjonesstore.com. Now, Sambucus is a fancy word for elderberry. This elderberry concoction is mixed with vitamin C and zinc. It's gummies. They're absolutely delicious. I take two of them every single day as prescribed by the directions on the bottle. Helps with things like healthy stress levels, antioxidant immune support. It promotes respiratory health, seasonal support, and it's GMO and gluten-free. Now, not only with Ultimate Sambucus gummies are you getting a delicious way to fight for your immune system, but you're keeping InfoWars on the air. We know that Alex Jones is under relentless attack. We know that InfoWars and this crew are under relentless attack as well. And it's not just us they're coming after. Frankly, it's you. They want to silence you. They want to kill your health. They want to kill your mind. And they want to subjugate you under a new world order government. And so as far as I'm concerned, by going to thealexjonesstore.com and getting Ultimate Sambucus gummies, you are not only fighting for your health, but you're fighting against the new world order in the most effective way possible. Please go to thealexjonesstore.com right now.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.